using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
And it's Thursday, the 22nd of April, year of our Lord, 2021, day 404 of America Held Hostage. Well, today we find out that the U.S. Postal Service has been doing surveillance. I'm telling you, this has been going on for a long time. We're going to talk about what they have done and how the government is obsessed about tracking everything about us. And we're also going to have as our guest in the second hour, Eric Peters of EP Autos, talking about tax by the mile. That is also about surveillance. We'll be right back. Stay with us. And we're also going to be talking about the strange nuclear war tweet coming out of U.S. Stratcom and how the U.S. has been moved to DEFCON 3 after statements made by Biden last week. He signed a national state of emergency, and in response they moved to DEFCON 3 last week. A lot of people are asking what is going on and how crazy can our government become? Well, we're going to talk about that. But let's begin with a letter from one of the listeners talking about how he, as a renter, found that his apartment complex in Dallas was putting in something called smart rent. Yes, how everything to control you is called smart. We have smart cities. We have smart cars. We have all kinds of a smart grid. They keep you slaves, you dumb slaves, under control. But I live just outside of Dallas in an apartment complex. On Wednesday afternoon, April the 7th, I received a written notice that there would be an installation team from a company called Smart Rent coming the next morning at 9 a.m. He said it annoyed me they didn't give me even 24-hour notice, but he says I was even more concerned about what the technology was about. The notice was full of vague platitudes about how they hoped that we would love our new smart home and how it would replace our locks with smart locks. The key was that the notice stated the installation would occur whether or not we were at our homes at the time. Now, of course, they do that a lot in apartment complex. So one of the unfortunate things is that they always take the reserve to themselves the ability to enter your home at any time for whatever reason they wish. Smart locks, they said, are connected to the internet to monitor your energy usage. And here's something that I think the listener should be concerned about. This may not just be a smart lock. This may be a smart meter that is there. And the continuous radiation that these things generate is something that's concerned a lot of people, but of course 5G is going to be everywhere, and we can't do anything about that human experiment. We just live with that technology that has become the broadband substrate for the smart cities. So he said he told him that he didn't want it. He says, I refer to this as smart slave technology. But as he was talking to the other people living in the complex, he said he found out that about 90% of them opted in. And he said, that's probably about the percentage of the population that's willing to stand up to this. Well, you know, I hope that it is as much as 10% of the people who are willing to stand up to this stuff. We may have more than that who are willing to stand up to these smart vaccines. But we'll have to wait and see, because the pressure hasn't begun yet. We'll talk about that later today. Fascism, he said, in its infancy, is known as convenience and security. Right. Safety, keeping you safe. And so along those lines, we see that Yahoo was very surprised to find the postal system is running a covert operation program to monitor Americans' social media posts. And I was not surprised at all. What I was surprised about was that the news, by and large, has completely ignored what the Postal Service has been doing for 100 years to surveil all of us without a search warrant. It's called a mail cover program. And yeah, that does require an order to do a mail cover, technically. But it's basically what this is. And they also take pictures of each and every piece of mail and store it for, well, they're not saying how long they store it or where they store it. Maybe it's in that massive NSA facility in Utah. Who knows? They thought it was kind of interesting that there was a program that had never been talked about called ICOP. Not IHOP, ICOP. Internet Covert Operations Program. Being run by the postal system. It involves having analysts trawl through social media sites to look for what the document describes as inflammatory postings, and then sharing that information across government agencies. The ICOP program and their document that these people at Yahoo came across, they said it was marked as, quote, law enforcement sensitive. It was distributed to the Department of Homeland Security's fusion centers. Remember those? It was funny. I was driving home, and it was when Glenn Beck was still on the radio, it was late afternoon. They've changed the schedule now. He's not there. I was flipping through channels as I do, listening to what different individuals chose to talk about at the time. And I was surprised to hear Glenn Beck and his co-host being surprised about fusion centers. I mean, this was about 2015. And of course, all that stuff blew up in 2009 after we found out that the fusion centers were alerting people to be on the lookout for cars that had bumper stickers for Ron Paul or for Chuck Baldwin, who had just run for president. Both of them had just run for president in 2008. That would indicate this person is dangerous. But be on the lookout for that. And various other things that these fusion centers were doing. These are essentially spy hubs to spy on American citizens, to identify political dissidents that they think would not agree with their politics, and to mark them, target them as dangerous. Now, that was 2009. So why are we surprised that that's being done in the wake of the Capitol 6 riots? So when we look at this, that is something that's been there for a long time. Locations and times have been identified for protests, they said, talking about the March 20th protest. This is partly explains, they don't mention it here, partly explains why Pelosi was making such a big deal out of it. Oh, look, you know, they're going to do something. Well, she's being egged on by these people at ICOP trying to justify their pathetic existence as Stasi snitches. Yeah, that's right. The U.S. Postal Service, a bunch of Stasi. A number of groups were expected to gather in cities around the globe on March the 20th as part of a worldwide rally for freedom and democracy to protest everything from lockdown measures to 5G. The bulletin included screenshots of posts about the protests from Facebook, Parler, Telegram, and other social media sites. Yeah, this thing has been going on for quite some time. And you should be very afraid of this. Certainly the postal system is very afraid of it.
Look, I'm sorry to bother you, but I'm a U.S. postal worker, and my mail truck was just ambushed by a band of backwoods mail-hating survivalists.
That's right. We now have not just James Clapper and Brennan. These guys are evil and dangerous. I don't know if they're armed or not. But we now have Newman joining their team from Seinfeld. And the reality is that social media was designed specifically for this. As I've said many times, I believe that this is a long-term build-up to this. I don't think it was any coincidence that the first reality TV show in the UK was called Big Brother, that they modeled this for the younger generation especially, to see how cool it is and how you can become a celebrity if you are an exhibitionist and post everything about yourself online. They wanted to do that, but they thought it was even better that you would willingly do that, that you would give them dossiers on you on social media. It's kind of like the bragging about the smartphones being Big Brother that the NSA did in screens that have never, to my knowledge, been talked about here in the U.S. It was only in Germany that they showed that from the Snowden documents. Three screens saying, who would have thought in 1984, and they show the Apple 1984 Mac commercial. Next slide shows Steve Jobs holding up an iPhone, and it says that this would become Big Brother. And then the third slide says, and that the idiots would line up to pay for it. And it shows everybody lined up outside of an Apple store to get their surveillance device. But it's not just the phone. It's social media. And the fact that since this is public, they don't need to have a search warrant. They can scrape anything there, and they can set up Postal Service ICOPs. Levinson Walden, who is one of the people looking at this, also questioned the legal authority of the Postal Service to monitor social media activity. If the individuals are monitoring or carrying out or planning criminal activity, that should be the purview of the FBI. If they're simply engaging in lawfully protected speech, even if the speech is odious or objectionable, then monitoring them on that basis raises serious constitutional concerns. No. They've never been concerned about this. Never been concerned. The U.S. Postal Inspection Service, they said, does not discuss its protocols, its investigative methods, or its tools when they contacted the U.S. Postal Service. There you go. See, it's national security. If they told you, they'd have to kill you. Just like every other government agency. They said the Postal Service isn't the only part of the government expanding its monitoring of social media. DHS officials spoke about the department's involvement in monitoring social media for domestic terrorism threats. It's a double whammy in terms of how they have given themselves access to this data. First of all, their point is that it's public. It's the public square. And it is the public square. It's a privately owned public square. But of course, they, even as they admit that, they allow the social media companies to exercise their rights as a private company to censor your communications in the digital public square. But for a long time, they have maintained the idea that if you have a phone, that they can do phone tracking, that the phone company, they don't have to have a search warrant. The phone company can willingly turn that information over to them because they said the phone company owns that data. So the social media companies can turn that information over to them. That's why they set them up. That's why they financed them with InQtel and with other venture capital firms in the 1990s when the internet became practical. They financed these companies, several of them, and then let them compete for who was going to win so they could get the most effective ones out there. But they picked the people that they would allow to compete and gave them a lot of money, just the same way that they do with the politicians that they allow to compete, knowing that the politicians will also be willing participants and serving them up information. So for the longest time, they've maintained that the phone companies own the data as much as you do, and they can turn over anything and everything about you. They proclaim that, you know, if you've got a letter that you're passing along, even they don't have to open up the letter. They can get a lot of information from just looking at the cover, the who is sending and who is receiving. And so they have been making those kinds of connections. So it's natural that they would use the Postal Service to do this, because the Postal Service for 100 years has been keeping dibs on who is talking to who. Stone, the University of Chicago professor, questioned why the post office would be tasked with something like identifying violent protests 2 months after the January 6th attack. He said, as a University of Chicago law professor, he said, it's a mystery. Yeah, right. Well, I mean, you'd have to be a conspiracy theorist to understand what's going on here. I don't understand why the government would go to the Postal Service for examining the internet for security issues. He said, that part is puzzling. There's so many other federal agencies that could do this. Yeah, that's right. There are so many federal agencies that are watching everything that you do and making judgments about it, trying to connect the dots, identifying you as a dissident. I don't understand why the post office would be doing it. There is no need for the post office to do it. You've got the FBI, you've got Homeland Security, and on and on and on. Yeah. They all want a piece of the action. It's about money. It's about money. Do you really want to know what happens in the post office?
Oh, what, you think you're so clever figuring that one out? But you don't know the half of what goes on here. So just walk away, Kramer.
Yeah, just walk away. You really don't want to know what goes on here, right? Well, let's go back. The only articles that I could see, nobody seemed to understand the whole idea about mail covers, although going back to July of 2013, shortly after Snowden dropped the documents, shortly after it was known that James Clapper committed perjury, testifying to the Senate on something very substantial. He committed perjury to the Senate, perjury to the U.S. Of course, they let the statute of limitations go. But everybody was like, seriously? The NSA is spying on us? Now, I thought that was just a conspiracy theory. So you had the mainstream media come out. This is CBS at the time, July 2013. What they were doing was they were trying to normalize and cover for the NSA at the time. And so they talked about it. Was that 8 years ago? And said, yeah, the Postal Service uses spying programs similar to the NSA. See, it's not a problem. You know, Newman does it. James Clapper can do it. Approximately 160 billion envelopes, packages, postcards were photographed by the U.S. Postal Service last year. That would have been 2012. Reports the New York Times. So see, they were in on that as well. Nothing to worry about. It's perfectly normal for the NSA to be spying on you, for every government agency to be spying on Americans. They all do it. What's the problem here? In one of its two programs, the Times says the postal mail is under similar surveillance without a warrant. They say they can't open the packages or letters without a warrant, but they collect images of the outside. Just looking at the outside of letters and other mail, I can see who you bank with. I can see who you communicate with. All kinds of useful information that gives investigators leads that they can then follow up on with a subpoena. So they don't need to have a search warrant. All that information is constantly being collected for them by Newman, and they just ask him, and he's more than willing to become a secret agent. It is not known how long the government saves the images. How about forever? Certainly have the capacity, don't they? It appears to be a broad expansion of another postal surveillance program called the Mail Covers Program that's been used for over a century. See, it's nothing to worry about with the NSA. Under the Mail Covers Program, law enforcement officials can ask postal workers to record information from the outsides of letters or parcels before they're delivered to the particular person. Well, no, actually, they're recording all of it. So they just say, I want the information that you've got on fill in the blank, because they're constantly recording it on everybody. The Postal Service then passes this information on to the law enforcement agency that requested it. The mail cover surveillance records are granted for approximately 30 days. But they say that this is essential to national security. Of course, everything the government does to violate your liberty and freedoms and the Constitution, all of that is essential to national security, is to keep you safe, right? No. National security is not about keeping you safe. National security is about continuity of government. It has nothing to do with your safety, nothing to do with your rights. In one recent case, the smoking gun reported in the Skin back in 2013, that by examining 60 pieces of mail from scanned images, the FBI was able to identify the suspect in ricin letters sent to President Obama and to Bloomberg in May of 2013. So it was done with a mail cover. And then they talked about it in Newsweek a year later, 2014. And they went into a little bit more detail about the two different programs, two different names. And, of course, now we know there's a third program, the ICOPS program. But they had a program called Mail Imaging. It takes a photograph of the outside of every piece of mail sent in the U.S. The other program is called the Mail Isolation Control and Tracking Program, created and put in place after the anthrax attacks. You know what else they create and put into place? The Model State Health Emergency Powers Act, which has now been put into action this year as part of their Dark Winter 2 that I told you about a couple of years ago was coming. Yeah, they did their first simulation just a couple of months before 9/11. They modeled a pandemic, a virus, that they would have to lock everybody down with draconian measures and keep you locked down until they had a vaccine that they could put out without doing any testing. And then, a couple of months later, they had the anthrax attack. Then a couple of months after that, they had the legislation that went out. And they created also the Mail Isolation Control and Tracking Program. It tracks and investigates mail suspected of containing biohazard material. And that was the one that they used with the case of Obama and Bloomberg. At the time, the U.S. Postal Service responded to Newsweek. They updated this after Newsweek said, this is how they're surveilling you in multiple ways. They came back and said, the mail cover is authorized only under limited circumstances by the U.S. Postal Inspection Service in support of law enforcement investigations. And the mail imaging process is used by the Postal Service to place barcodes on mail pieces that could not be read by mail processing equipment. The images are not used to monitor the mailing behavior of any person. Did you believe that then? Do you believe that now? I mean, we've also found out that the Postal Service, and they had the organization that did that, was down in San Antonio. This is, I don't remember how many years ago this was. But it was after the Snowden leaks. Found out that the Postal Service would intercept packages addressed to certain countries or individuals or whatever from if you ordered a computer by mail, they would intercept that. And then they had a team that would put tracking devices in those computers before they finished the last leg of delivery. That's your government. And this is your government as well, Amazon. The technocracy. Amazon is going to let Whole Foods shoppers pay with a swipe of their palm. This has been coming for a while as well. Palm readers. Get your fortune told. Now, you're going to make the fortune for Jeff Bezos. He's been told he'll get a fortune if he reads your palms. And these people can predict your future pretty accurately by watching your behavior. What the anticipatory intelligence is, the pre-crime aspect of this, the Minority Report aspect of this, rolling out biometric technology at its Whole Foods stores. Starting yesterday, Amazon.com did, in Seattle. It's going to let customers associate a credit card with their palm print. Do you think as they keep a record of your palm, just like the U.S. Postal Service keeps a record of all of your letters, you think that they might turn that over to law enforcement if they wanted it? Of course they will. They'll probably monetize that, unlike the U.S. Postal System. The deployment stops short of introducing Amazon's cashierless technology, which critics said could result in job losses. So Amazon is going to still have people there to scan items at checkout. And they said, don't worry, it's not going to affect the jobs at Whole Foods because they just had... They're not quite ready with the technology to slit the throats of the workers yet. They just had a union vote. But that's coming. It's been coming for quite some time. These technologies are being rolled out as a response, even though you had Bloomberg. Just before all of this Dark Winter 2 began, Bloomberg was saying, the smart people are out there. We're looking to take away your jobs. He talked about how stupid the farmers were. And then we kind of replaced the farmers with the Industrial Revolution. Most of the people were making things. But we were going to replace both of those groups of people. They're just idiots. The smart people, said Bloomberg, like me, are working on how we're going to get rid of your jobs. We just need to figure out how we're going to keep you pacified with universal basic income so you don't grab the guillotines and come after us. And so the way they figured out to do that was, to put a virus out there. Because it's not the virus that's taking your, it's not them that's taking your job. They're doing this because you should be afraid of the virus, and you really don't want to have any contact with these filthy humans. When you look at what's happening in Times Square, for example, in New York, Taco Bell opens their digital-only location in Times Square, and it's going to serve alcohol. If only they served food at Taco Bell. you can get all your fast food garbage through automated kiosks. They said, built with the energy and the on-the-go vibrance of New York City in mind, the newest restaurants embrace technology in a whole new way to serve the demands of New Yorkers, said Taco Bell. So it's going to be little tiny store locations that won't have any people out front. They'll still have those filthy humans in the back, but don't worry, they're out of sight, out of mind. You don't have to worry about it. They're working on that. They're going to make sure that they've got robots cooking the food too, so the food is not, you get purge out all these filthy humans because of the virus, of course. It isn't because the corporations want to replace workers with robots. No, no, no. It's not it at all. It's just serendipitous. It's just a coincidence, these coincidence theorists are saying. The disbandment of cash registers at the new Taco Bell cantina, that's what they call it, the cantina, will require fewer employees to run the operation. So far, they've got 20 cantinas across New York's five boroughs that are already open, though the only digital one is in Times Square. And other restaurant chains like Chipotle and Starbucks have been opening digital-only ordering and pickup. They said in the Zero Hedge article, the focus is not just to minimize human labor, but to increase pickup orders forced by the virus pandemic. Bloomberg didn't want to get rid of your jobs. Elon Musk didn't want to get rid of your jobs. I mean, they were handing money hand over fist to Andrew Yang, pushing universal basic income. And what Trump put in, that's not universal basic income. That's a stimulus check. And we had to take your job, all of you non-essential businesses and workers, we had to take your jobs, middle class, because of the virus. I know it doesn't affect the big box retailers who are going to be replacing everybody with the robots, but they had to do it. Had no other choice. They were forced by the virus to do this. The automated concept could become standard at all Taco Bells by the end of this decade, 2030, that would be. Right? That was the plan all along. Even 70% of doctors and lawyers said the South Korean government would be replaced by 2030. As restaurants pivot towards automation and towards artificial intelligence, it will displace workers, leading to a surge in unemployment. And Yum Brands, which owns Taco Bell, also owns Kentucky Fried Chicken. They now call it KFC. I guess Kentucky's just too politically incorrect. Anyway, they own KFC, Pizza Hut, Taco Bell, The Habit Burger Grill. I've never seen one of these, and Wing Street. What is frightening is when Yum begins to use robot chefs to automate the back end of the restaurant, especially because it will eliminate human food preparation. They'll eliminate all their employees, pretty much. They'll have some people who are stocking ingredients. And we can put masks on them and gloves on them and protect you from the virus. Already, KFC is testing what it calls the restaurant of the future, where automation and artificial intelligence dominates both the front and the back end. So then, asks Zero Hedge, what do you do with all the displaced workers? Well, that's what you have wars for. That's why you have wars when you bring in an industrial revolution, like they did in the 1860s. That's why you have wars every 80 years or so. Nothing like starting a war to help dig the economy out of the rut that it's currently in. That's right. Usually when you have these fourth turnings, they're accompanied by it's massive restructuring of society, accompanied by massive economic unrest, and usually a war. And we'll talk about that coming up here in a second. Get the F out of New York altogether, say Black Lives Matter protesters to white restaurant owners. After the verdict of Derek Chauvin, we're not having a kumbaya moment. It's not, can we all just get along? No, no, no. Get out. Video shows BLM agitators yelling at diners, get the F out of New York. We don't want you here. We don't want your money. We don't want your effing restaurants owned by white men. Some of the people in the restaurant started saying, let's give the people 30% tips. But I don't think that's going to be enough. Now, as we're looking at AI regulations, the EU is going to come to our rescue here. They're going to protect us from the abuses of artificial intelligence, right? Well, that's what the AP says. So you can always trust what the AP says. Associated Press. Associated propaganda is what it is, associated with the government. Risky uses of artificial intelligence that threaten people's safety or rights, such as live facial scanning, should be banned or tightly controlled. See, there's nothing to worry about. If you're worried about around-the-clock surveillance and biometric tracking and people looking at everything that you're doing everywhere, even on social media, and keeping records on you, this is one of the reasons why they have pushed you into the cyberspace, lock you down, make sure that you don't get together and have protests about the removal of your freedom, because that is something we should all be very concerned about. Pelosi and everybody should be concerned about those people pushing back against their enslavement and imprisonment because of the virus. So, if you're concerned about that, the Associated Propaganda has something to tell you to make you feel better. European Union officials said yesterday, as they outlined an ambitious package of proposal regulations, that they will rein in the rapidly expanding technology. They will have rules for applications that are deemed to be high risk, such as artificial intelligence systems to filter out school, job, or loan applicants. They would also ban artificial intelligence outright in a few cases considered to be too risky, such as government social scoring systems. That's too risky to let the artificial intelligence do that. We should let the Postal Service workers do that, or somebody that Nancy Pelosi likes, right? They will be doing it. We can't trust the artificial intelligence people to do that. And, maybe we get Newman. He's a pretty eager beaver. The EU is spearheading the development of new global norms to make sure that AI can be trusted. That's what this is all about. It's about creating a bubble of trust. I know you may be looking at this and putting 2 + 2 together, but let me say that you have absolutely nothing to be concerned about with Skynet or the people behind it. They'd like to know a little bit about your files, Mrs. Robinson, but they're really just here to help you. It can be a case where a toy, listen to the way that they put out a scenario. This is what they're going to protect you from. It could be, they said, if the AI is using manipulating behavior to exploit children's vulnerabilities, you mean like a counselor at school telling them they don't know what gender they are? You mean that kind of exploitation of a child? No. What they're saying is AI might be in a toy that could use a voice system to manipulate the child into doing something dangerous. Yeah, that's what we're all worried about, right? And that's why DARPA has the autonomous robots. It's to help little old ladies across the street because, you know, we just don't have enough Boy Scouts anymore. There will, however, be an exception for narrowly defined law enforcement purposes, such as searching for a missing child or a wanted person or preventing a terror attack. But the EU lawmakers want the carve-outs removed over fears that it could be used by authorities to justify future widespread use of the technology that's intrusive and inaccurate. Oh, yes. Don't worry. They're going to protect you. They said EU officials at the very end of the Associated Propaganda article said the rules would encourage the industry's growth by raising trust in artificial intelligence systems and by introducing legal clarity for companies. See, that's what it's really about. This article and the Potemkin protection, it's all just about raising trust. Trust me, we have rules to prevent this. Just like, you know, we have a Bill of Rights that keeps the government from, removing your due process and locking you at home and forcing you to take a vaccine and all these different things. We have rules about that. We have a Bill of Rights, so don't worry. Another letter that was sent to me, actually this wasn't a letter, these are a couple of comments I thought were very good, on Subscribestar. These are people who have are regular subscribers. They've signed up. You can sign up at Subscribestar, David Knight Show. You can sign up $5 a month up to, I think the highest one is like $200, $250, but there's a lot of different levels. There's about a dozen different levels. And so there were some comments on Subscribestar. One person said, David, I know you say communism will never work because central planners only have one brain instead of the free market's global network of brains. But do you think that AI intelligence would allow central planners to succeed? Yeah. I said, that's a frightening but plausible concept. In my opinion, it's not simply the calculation or the judgment, but even more importantly is the data collection. And artificial intelligence could do both. It could collect and organize the data, and if they want, it could make the calculations. And let's understand, too, that this form of communism that's being imposed on us by the technocrats is not something that they really care about, whether or not it works. Stalin and Mao didn't really care about whether or not their programs work. Stalin deliberately starved people in the Ukraine. You had Mao deliberately starving tens of millions of people with his cultural leap forward. Those are control tactics. They're not out there. They're not fretting. Oh, I don't know what I'm going to do. I mean, you know, we've got all of this. Here's the breadbasket of the Soviet Union, the Ukraine, and they're starving. It was deliberate. These people are not trying to bring home the bacon. They're using this to consolidate their power and eliminate their enemies. And so when we look at the communism, the Marxism that's being pushed by the technocracy, first of all, it's just like the educational system. The educational system is not designed to teach Johnny to read and write and to do arithmetic, the three R's. Designed to propagandize Johnny, to turn him into a little Marxist, or to turn Susie into a Marxist who hates Johnny and doesn't know what gender she is, and neither does he. That's what it's designed to do. It's designed also to make sure that they don't do reading, writing, and arithmetic. And so when we look at whether or not the technocracy and these neo-Marxists are worried about making things work. No, they're not worried about delivering anything for us. They're looking at how they can control our numbers, reduce our numbers, population control by population reduction. And they're looking at how they can control the population and what it does. And that means surveillance. Before I move on, I had another comment on Subscribestar. You mentioned a company that turns R-rated movies into PG. That was when I was talking to Nick Cole about what he had to say. Hollywood studio, he did it in response to something that Disney put out. And he said, well, I'm not talking about Disney, but he said, necessarily. There's not that many different studios out there anymore. There's been a tremendous amount of consolidation. And he said, this is not necessarily about Disney, but he said there was a studio that was looking at doing their Star Wars-like space military saga, a kind of a Star Wars meets Afghanistan, really what it's about. And he said, we were told we're not interested in doing white Christian trash. And he said, that really offended him because he said, well, this is not Christian stuff. He's a Christian, but he didn't insert that into his novel. And they said, no. They're talking about your audience, your white Christian trash military audience. And so I said, yeah, I've seen that for a long time. I talked about how Hollywood really wants to put out their, they take pride in pushing their worldview, unlike Christians who are ashamed of their worldview for the most part. And I talked about how I engaged a New Line Cinema executive when we had video stores. I said, I've got a lot of people really excited about the possibilities of DVD technology, that you could create an airline version and you could go from an R-rated film down to a PG film because you know that you're throwing these scenes in there gratuitously. You might have a good story, but you got to have the protagonist go to a topless bar so that you can have, you know, some pictures of naked girls on poles, and that gets you your R-rated movie for your ego, because it doesn't help their box office. But, you know, if they do a PG film, that really hurts their egos to do that. And he goes, yeah, they hate that, though. They'll really fight us on those if we do that. And sure enough, not long after that, New Line came out with a movie that was a pretty hard R to start with, and they took it to an X. So you could choose to watch the hard R, or you could go straight to an X-rated, because that's the direction they want to go. And then I mentioned that there was a company that came out with a technology that would go the way that most people want it to go from R to PG. And I thought that it was bankrupted. And he said, there was a company called Vid Angel. They got sued by Hollywood, because I'm pretty sure they're still in business. And I said, yeah, I thought they had driven them out of business, because long before we got out of the business, and we've been out of it for over 20 years, they were coming after them. And how can they do that? When you've bought the product, all they're doing is selling you some software that you download for a particular movie, and it works with a DVD to branch around those areas. And I was kind of surprised that they still are in business, by the way. And I was kind of surprised by that, because I kind of thought that DVDs were done. Everybody doing movies downloaded and that type of thing. But they nearly got them this last year, last August. Several Hollywood studios came after them, and I don't know what the basis for that was. But they sued them, and they had a judgment against them for $62 million last August. And then in September, at the last minute, they reorganized under a bankruptcy protection, and they got it down to a $9 million judgment, and they're continuing on in business for now. But they've been fighting this company for 20 years. That's how adamant Hollywood is, that they're going to feed this filth to you, that they're going to flash it in front of you while you're sitting there on the couch with your family. Well, we don't watch movies anymore. But if you want to get that, you can get VidAngel and DVDs, and they will branch around that stuff for you. Manhattan will stop prosecuting prostitution, as we talk about where our society is. Yeah, prostitution will be fine. Just don't go out to eat at a restaurant, and you better not get outdoors without a mask. But prostitution, that's fine. We have, talking about movies, we have become the Back to the Future that you saw in the second of the series when Biff became Donald Trump. That's the Back to the Future that we are living in right now. So prostitution is legal. Just don't go to church. Don't go to a restaurant. And you better not show your face. Put a mask on if you go outside. And this is Cyrus Vance Jr., the guy who is trying to get the tax returns of Donald Trump so that he can come after him. Cyrus Vance Jr., his new policy, as he appeared virtually in court, because they don't have trials anymore. They've shut down the trials, shut down jury trials, but he kind of zooms into court. He asked the judge to dismiss 914 open cases involving prostitution and unlicensed massage. So I guess you can have prostitution's okay as long as it's a licensed massage. But now it's all okay, along with 5,080 cases in which the charge was loitering for the purposes of prostitution. So you got 6,000 cases of prostitution here that Cyrus Vance Jr. is throwing out. And so I guess we could say he's the hooker's best friend best friend that the hookers have had in New York City since Elliot Spitzer. The governor in 2008. He got busted in 2008, removed from being governor, because he was transferring so much money out to these high-priced prostitution rings that he exceeded the $10,000 limit. And then he realized that he exceeded that, and that was going to be reported to the government. And so, you know, kind of like Dennis Hastert, who was the longest Speaker of the House for the Republicans that they handpicked because he was a pedophile. They knew he was a pedophile when he was a wrestling coach. And then they groomed him They put him in as Speaker of the House. And Dennis Hastert got caught the same way, doing a withdrawal of more than $10,000 and getting reported. And so they investigated him, as well as it blew up on Dennis Hastert. They didn't come after Dennis Hastert, of course, for being a pedophile. No, that's okay. He violated the structuring charges, the reporting charges, because he then, after he found out they noticed that, then he started making structured withdrawals so that they wouldn't report this money. So that's how they got Elliot Spitzer, too, the former governor of New York, and finding out that he was transferring a lot of money to high-paid hookers. Now Cuomo won't have to worry. Or Vance. I just want to know, does Cyrus Vance Jr. wear calf-length black socks like Elliot Spitzer? That's what we all want to know, right? Because none of the rest of this stuff matters. These people are going to do whatever they want. So it's just a curiosity, isn't it? Because nobody holds these criminals. It's the criminals who are the prosecutors, the criminals who are the governors, right? And they're not going to do anything about pedophilia. They're not going to do anything about statute of limitations. As a matter of fact, as these people have now opened up a new area of predation on children, and that is this gender reassignment stuff for very, very young minors, even in kindergarten, you've got governors, Republican and Democrat, saying, we don't want this. We don't want this. You got a Louisiana governor now, Democrat, John Bel Edwards, has announced that he will oppose legislation that would restrict experimental transgender procedures for minors. And he will also oppose legislation that would preserve biological standards in sports. As I said yesterday, I don't really care about that. I really don't care about women's sports. Fine, stop it for that. It's an absurd situation, and it ought to be opposed everywhere. All of this transgender stuff should be opposed by every sane person. Do not allow them to shame you into playing this game with them. I'm not talking about punishing people, but I'm also not going to play along with them. They're sick. They need they need spiritual help, not psychological help. Psychologists will probably mess them up even worse. But don't play along with this. Don't live this lie. That's one of the reasons why they're focusing on transgenderism, right? It's one of the most blatantly obvious lies of 2 + 2 = 5. And if they can get you to play along with that, they're well on their way to getting you to play along with the rest of the Orwellian totalitarianism. You'll live the lie in other things as well. Louisiana state legislators have introduced two bills to limit children's access to sex change procedures. The two bills would ban gender-confused males from competing in girls' sports. One of the bills would mandate that parents have to consent to any, quote, gender identity counseling done in schools, or to any medical interventions that are then sought by children. Do you understand where this is coming from? The other insidious part of this, so many different areas of this that are awful. First of all, getting you to kowtow to the lie, to get used to being, well, I don't want to be purged. In polite company, I just want to be nice. I want to get along with everybody. So if this biological person says they're female, I'll treat them that way. I'll call them by their pronouns, all the rest of the stuff. So learn to live by the lie, number one. Number two, it's about removing parental rights and destroying the family. Because this is, you notice that they put in here, medical interventions sought by children. So we're going to talk to the kids. We're going to brainwash these kids. It's not a little toy with some kind of sinister AI in it that's talking to your kid. No, no, no. These are the school counselors who are doing this to your kids, who are susceptible. And if they can convince the kids, then the kids have rights, children's rights movement. The children's rights movement, the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, been signed by every country except the U.S. And it's one of the projects that I worked on more than 10 years ago. I did some videos for them. And because the left is constantly trying to get us to ratify that. We're the only country that hasn't ratified that convention. And once you ratify that, it destroys parental rights. And so that's what's being involved here. Right? This is kind of a backdoor to getting rid of parental rights to making that attack on the family as well. But then the other aspect of this always is a pedophile agenda to say that if the kids can have the maturity to decide what gender they are, if the kids can decide that they want medical interventions and so forth, the kids can consent to sex. It's all of those things. It's pedophilia, it's destruction of the family, it's asserting children's rights over parental rights, all of that, and the fundamental lie that is there. So this one bill would say, well, you got to have the parents' consent. And he doesn't like that. He doesn't want the parents to have any involvement in what's being done to their kids. No, no, no. Get the parents out of the way. We're going to do this through the schools, through Disney, through the news organizations, through social media. The other bill would ban transgender procedures for minors outright, and it would prohibit schools from withholding information about students' gender confusion from parents. Violations could result in up to 2 years in prison and a $10,000 fine. So the Democrat doesn't like that. And this isn't a party issue. Asa Hutchinson in Arkansas didn't like that either. And he was overridden by the state Republican majority. This is an article, by the way, from LifeSite News. The parents have to sign off on it if a child has cancer and needs chemo treatment. But no, for these things, these puberty blockers, no, we're going to do that without the parents being involved. So what does that involve? Well, the puberty blockers will prevent bone growth. They impact adolescent brain development. They inhibit fertility. They were banned for minors, these drugs, in the UK last year, but not our Republican and Democrat governors. They're vetoing these bills left and right. And unless you've got a largely Republican legislature, you're not going to get this stopped. That's where we are in Sodom and Gomorrah today. It could lead to increased suicide attempts and other life-threatening complications. Already has. And these people that they mess with, their minds, they have a very high rate of suicide. And they'll push this and say, well, they have such a high rate of suicide, we need to let them go ahead and act out these fantasies. No, that just makes it worse. They've got high levels of suicide because the mind games and the gaslighting that you've been playing with them. Then, after the puberty blockers, come the cross-sex hormones. And the FDA has never approved either puberty blockers or cross-sex hormones. And there have never been any clinical studies. You know, kind of like the vaccines that we've got as well. The cross-sex hormones are typically followed by mutilating, chemically or surgically. So give them something else to be concerned about. We're going to have Eric Peters joining us shortly. And before we get him on, just thought it was interesting, that, as I said earlier, you know, prostitution is now going to be legal in New York, at least New York City, Cyrus Vance Jr. Drugs are okay many places, but better make sure that you don't have stuff hanging from your rearview mirror, because, you know, that was a big deal with Dante Wright, shot and killed this month in Minnesota by their Stellar Police Department. They pulled him over because of an expired registration sticker. But as Reason Magazine points out, after they stopped him, they also noted that he had air fresheners hanging from his rearview mirror, and that violated their traffic code, which by itself would have been legally sufficient to detain him. So prostitution, okay. Church, restaurants, going outside without masks, hanging stuff from your rearview mirror, that's not okay. And I get it. I don't like to have stuff that is obstructing my view. As a matter of fact, I took my clues, I fixed my car, along the lines of advice from this driver in the Gumball Rally. Remember that classic film?
And now, my friend, the first rule of Italian driving. What's behind me is not important.
He just ripped off the mirror and throws it out. And that's what I did in my car as well. I didn't just rip it off, but I did remove my rearview mirror. I don't even have one, so I can't violate these things. I don't have to worry about obstructing that because the mirror itself was an obstruction to me. I noticed in my little car, I was setting up kind of high, and I noticed that when I would pull up to intersections, like a four-way stop, if I looked off to my right, the mirror was obstructing where the car was. And so after starting to pull out and then realize, oh, there's somebody there, so I'd have to duck down into that mirror. It's like, I'm going to get rid of this thing. I remembered seeing that movie. It's like, oh, it was always, I don't care what's behind me. And so, and I have better visibility now forward. It's unrestricted. No air fresheners hanging down and no obtrusive rearview mirror. What I did was, and it's legal, you only have to have two mirrors pointing to the back. And so I have the side view mirrors on the outside, on both sides of the car. And I actually have better peripheral vision on it because I got some of those cheap stick-on concave mirrors that give you a very wide-angle view. So I can see people. I don't have any blind spots, but of course I have a convertible, so I didn't really have any blind spots there anyway. But I have much better visibility to the side and to the rear, and I don't even have a rear view mirror. But that's beside the point. Actually, here's the point. This rule about why they got involved with Dante Wright. First, it says his expired registration sticker. Then he's got stuff dangling from his rear view mirror. It illustrates how easy it is for police to justify traffic stops by citing petty civil violations. You can have things such as unacceptable tire wear or restricting window tints that are too dark, or they can pull you over because the distance from the intersection at which you stopped or used your turn signal. Or if you're not maintaining a safe distance, or if you're not driving in a reasonable and prudent manner. Those are kind of subjective, right? If you've got a windshield crack that substantially obstructs the driver's clear view. As Reason Magazine quotes the University of Toledo law professor, he said, the upshot of all this regulation is that even the most cautious driver would find it virtually impossible to drive for even a short distance without violating some traffic law, and a police officer willing to follow any driver for a few blocks, therefore always have probable cause to make a stop. And so, as we saw with the case of Dante Wright, even petty violations can lead to interrogation, to searches, to arrests, and become violent, potentially deadly confrontations. Just watch out. Make sure you don't put your graduation tassels or your rosaries or your crucifixes or your fuzzy dice, any of that in Minnesota. I agree. I just don't think there ought to be a law. I just don't like that stuff hanging down. It doesn't work. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to talk more about cars, specifically about the tax by mile, a new article by Eric Peters at epautos.com, Mulcting by the Mile. We'll be right back with Eric Peters. Stay with us, epautos.com.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Thanks for joining us. Eric Peters, epautos.com. And I want to talk to you about your new article, Mulching by the Mile. This is very, very important, what's coming in. It's going to be pushed really hard. You and I both know that by Buttigieg, the infrastructure secretary.
Him. Not just him. There are a number of states that are doing this, including, I referenced Oregon, but also Washington State. And I believe there are a number of other states that are on the verge of putting forward similar proposals.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Tell people what this really involves.
Well, it's ironic. They are saying, well, we're not getting enough gas tax revenue because of all these fuel-efficient cars that the government has been cramming down everybody's throats by via regulations and mandates. So now, drum roll, they're going to punish everybody who's bought a fuel-efficient car by hitting them with a mileage tax. And, of course, the motor fuels tax isn't going anywhere, so they're going to be two taxes now. And it's not just the tax, because in order to implement this, they're going to have some way of keeping track of how far you drive and also when and where you drive. So they're going to use that mechanism to control transportation. They're going to make it more expensive. They're going to apply more control so as to make it more unpleasant, with the ultimate aim, as you and I know, of pushing people out of cars and into government-controlled forms of transportation.
And so they're specifically in Oregon, as you point out in your article, they're going after fuel-efficient vehicles beginning in 2026, and that would be any vehicle that gets more than 30 miles per gallon. So I guess I need to modify my engine to make it less. Actually, I'm a little bit below 30 miles per gallon, but I could do something like add a supercharger to it and take it below the level.
Yeah, well, they're going to close that loophole before it even begins.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, this will not be directed solely and exclusively at hybrids and electric cars and vehicles that get more than 30 miles per gallon. It's going to be directed at everybody. And by the way, even if you don't drive, this will affect you because the things that you buy at the store, food, clothes, anything that's shipped by truck is going to get more expensive because these commercial operators are going to be facing higher fuel costs, higher drive-by mile costs, which inevitably they're going to pass on to the end purchaser of what they're delivering.
And we're not conspiracy theorists. We understand how the government works. What they're doing, as you point out, they still have the fuel taxes for the trucks and so forth, but they'll add the tax by mile. And we've seen for the longest time how government will typically, as people start to pay attention to how heavy the tax rate is on a particular tax, they'll add a new tax off to the side that'll start out very small itself and then ramp that up as well. So it's death by a thousand cuts. It's like you start noticing that they're sticking this knife in you pretty deep with this one thing. So then they'll stick the knife in to you on the other side a little bit shallower, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and it shows also the contempt that they have for the intelligence of the American public. People were sold on the idea of fuel-efficient cars, whether in the form of the CAFE mandates or the hybrids of the electric cars. So they said to themselves, okay, I'm willing to accept paying a little bit more for a vehicle or a lot more in the case of an electric car because I'm going to save money on gas. Well, guess what, sucker? You're not only going to pay more for your vehicle, now you're going to pay more to drive it in the form of these mileage taxes.
That's right. I was talking about this yesterday, making the comparison to the vaccines. You know, I was talking about what happened with Elon Musk. Mm-hmm. And how, you know, he's got an investigation going for this latest thing in Houston. And I said, you know, they have, as many people are correctly pointing out, he's conducting a live human experiment on public roads. And it's not just an experiment that involves the people in the Teslas, it's everybody else is on the road as well. But I said, that's not really any different. Look at what they're doing with the vaccines. You know, they haven't tested and qualified these things. They put them out as a live human experiment. And then in both of these cases, what do? They lavish a lot of money on the corporations that are throwing these things out there. And then they move to, they hold up some holy grail of we're going to save you from the virus or we're going to save you from planetary meltdown with global warming. And so we're going to have these corporations that are out there. We're going to shower them with cash so they can provide a solution to you. And guess what? The solution is dangerous, it's untested, but ultimately the solution is to give them control over your life, to regulate where you go, what you do, both with the vaccine, both with these cars that are going to have the black box, and to make sure that they can surveil everything that you do. It's the same
thing. Interesting. It used to be the carrot and the stick.
Yeah.
Now it's just the stick.
That's right.
It's not just with regard to transportation and cars. You know, in Oregon, not coincidentally, they are proposing to make the wearing of the holy face burqa permanent, even if people have been vaccinated. So, you know, all these people who thought, oh, well, this thing with the holy rag or the face mask, it's just a temporary thing, and I'll get my vaccine, and then I'll be able to take off my mask, and I'll be able to live normally again. Well, guess what, sucker? No. They want you to wear the thing forever.
The only way you're going to live normally is to get out of Oregon. And they got some people that are trying to do that. They're desperately trying to join Idaho, but Oregon isn't going to let them go.
Yeah, you know, I said, tongue-in-cheek, but also somewhat seriously in the piece that I posted earlier today, suggested that perhaps the time has come for some kind of a class action litigation against the government. And after all, they have been telling people, look, we're going to make sure that these awful car companies give you high-mileage cars because that's going to save you money. That was the sell. They've been telling people that for years. And now they're going to make them pay more. It seems to me that there's something inherently fraudulent about that and possibly actionable. Johnny Cochran, call home.
That's right. Well, I think as well, when you look at all of this, I believe that's one of the reasons why they focused so much on the battery-driven cars is because you could have an electric car where you fill it up with hydrogen. You know, the Toyota's worked mm-hmm. on these and have zero emissions. You could have zero emissions with a diesel car. If money is no object, you can clean that up just like you can clean up a coal-fired power plant if you want to spend the money to
yep.
do that. So there's absolutely no reason to... If you buy into this CO2 is going to destroy the world nonsense, there's absolutely no reason that you have to rule out every other form of motivation except for electric battery-operated car, except for the fact that with all these other forms, they could put a tax on at that source. They could tax the pump, yep. and they could also tax the hydrogen compressed tank when you fill up your car. But for the battery-operated electric car, they can't. And so, well, we have to have, you know, it's a problem-solution. Or mm-hmm. in this case, a solution came first. We have the battery-operated cars, and now we got a problem. We don't have any way mm-hmm. to pay for our roads, so now we got to put the black box on everybody's cars.
Well, and there's another aspect to it with regard to your point about paying for the roads. That's disingenuous. What they've been yeah. doing is diverting a great portion of the tax receipts that are acquired from the motor vehicles fuels tax that we all pay when we fill up. And those taxes were supposed to have gone to fund roads, maintaining existing roads, building new roads, bridges, and things of that kind. Well, they have been diverting that for all of these non-road-related things, including the elimination of roads, replacing them with bike lanes, for example.
Yes. Yes.
Setting up these probable cause-free sobriety/safety checkpoints. Various public education campaigns, all of which have nothing to do whatsoever with the roads. So it's no wonder they're running out of money because they're spending it on all of these other things.
Yeah, yeah. As you point out, you know, adding these bike lanes and stuff, they call that a road diet.
Yep.
And they're like gremlins out there destroying the infrastructure that's there, not building any new infrastructure. If they're like Pothole Pete, Pete Buttigieg, when he was mayor, they called
yep.
him Pothole Pete because he didn't fix the roads. But then these people are spending money to actively... make inverted potholes, speed bumps,
mm-hmm.
right? And they call
mm-hmm.
that road calming. And then they transfer the money to their light rail systems and their subways and their buses that they've taxed the people who are driving cars and then put it into that. Nobody's riding those things. It's
right,
absolutely
and that's an important point.
Yeah.
They are acting contrary to the will of the people. You know, these leftists
right.
love to talk about how they're the champion of the people. Well, they're not. The people clearly want to have personal mobility, to be able to go where they want to on their own schedule without being herded into some kind of a collectivized transit system, which is why these collectivized transit systems, the rail, the bus, and all of that, are chronically underused and chronically over budget because most people simply don't want to use them, whether for personal reasons or simply for practical reasons, in that it's not convenient, it takes longer, and the car is a better choice for them.
Yes, absolutely. Let's talk about one of the other new articles as well. How defensive driving killed driving. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, it's another one of these awful euphemisms. You know, it seems like I have to whack-a-mole every single day, and you too, you know, to beat these things down.
Mm-hmm.
They use words like defensive, implying somehow that you're acting in a prudent and rational way, when in fact what they're encouraging people to do is to be utterly passive, to just mindlessly obey every arbitrary rule that comes out, and not practice aware, attentive driving, which used to be an expectation. So this is why we have the recurrent, ongoing problem with people who will squat in the passing lane. You remember the passing
mm-hmm.
lane? They just sit there, you know, and yeah. you know, they say, well, I'm doing a speed limit. I'm driving defensively rather than using the rearview mirror, seeing that, hey, there's a car overtaking me. I should get out of the way. You know, that would actually improve the flow of traffic, make the road safer. It is why in Germany on the high-speed autobahns, where they had unlimited speed limits, they've begun to limit those, but in any event, they had a lower per capita accident rate over there, even though they had no speed limits at all, because they simply expected more of drivers. People did not squat in the passing lane. They used their mirrors. They yielded to faster-moving traffic. They practiced competent driving skills, and all of that is just being sloughed off to the side here in favor of these electronic Band-Aids that are encouraging even more poor driving, and it's like a circling the drain kind of a phenomenon.
Yeah, that's right, and they actually had some a lot more training for their drivers as well. You're talking about noticing people in the rearview mirror. I was just laughing about the fact they're giving people tickets. Like, you know, that's one of the things they came after Dante Wright about, was he had stuff hanging off his rearview mirror.
Yep.
I said, I don't have one. I referenced, you probably remember Gumball Rally, where the guy says,
I do, of course,
the first rule of driving, and he takes off the mirror and he throws it over his shoulder and he says, you don't care what's behind you. Well, you got a lot of left lane bandits who don't care what's behind them either. And they consider and rightfully so, they consider that to be a hazard on the Autobahn.
Yeah, and they have characterized things like, for example, you know, you merge with traffic and the object is to merge with traffic, which means pushing down on the gas pedal to get your speed up to that of traffic. Well, now that is being characterized as aggressive driving. And using some of these electronic nannies that they've embedded in vehicles, you know, commercial drivers have to deal with that. This is why people are creeping out into traffic, pulling out in front of traffic that's going 35, 40 miles an hour, and then getting mad when, you know, the car runs right up on them and the guy honks their horn and they call that guy aggressive, when in fact it's the passive-aggressive, incompetent driver who's creating the problem.
Well, and they have said that their goal in these self-driving cars and things like that is to, everybody likes, oh, you know, these electric cars, they really accelerate, and they do. But that's not the goal. The goal is that, and they stated this, as they're working with the self-driving cars and the autonomous cars, they want to make sure that they accelerate so slowly that you can set your coffee cup on the dashboard and not have it spill. That's what these people are after, and that's the way they want you to drive. And if you don't drive that way, the black box is going to tattle on you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A number of new cars have an electronic, I'll put it in finger air quotes, feature called Speed Limit Assist. Have you heard of this?
Tell everybody. Yeah.
Okay, so the car knows, using its GPS system, what the speed limit is on any given road in real time as you drive. Mm-hmm. If you exceed the speed limit, the little icon flashes on the dashboard, which looks just like the speed limit sign, except it has a little red thing through it indicating you're speeding. Well, that technology can be easily used to govern your speed and prevent you from exceeding the speed limit anywhere, ever, or to dun you for it. For every mile an hour over the speed limit, every single time you do it, you get an automatic rate adjustment, or perhaps they simply debit your checking account. That sort of thing is right now on the verge of being done, because it's already actually possible.
That's what the black box will be used for. It'll be used to report that, and later that day, you'll get a message from the insurance company. Well, that's one, you know, and after you get X number of these things, your rates go sky high. And that's the way they stop people from driving. At that point, people just say, well, you know, I've got to go someplace, so I'll just let the car drive. And I won't bother to drive because I can't afford these insurance rates.
Sure. It's no wonder that the young demographic, people in the 16 to 30 age bracket, I think it's a fourth of the people in that demographic, don't have and don't intend to get a driver's license.
Yeah, that's right. Just giving up.
It's just too much hassle. It's too much bother. It's not fun. So the heck with it. You know, so throw them some UBI and some video games and they'll be happy.
Well, I mean, it's to the point where, because of all these lockdown rules and the crazy restaurant owners, I mean, it's even around here, it's the independent restaurant owners. It's not just the chains. Demanding, even though it's not a state law anymore, these people are demanding that I wear a mask, so I got nowhere to go. And it's going to continue to be that way, because I'm not getting the vaccine either. So it's to the point where, because I don't commute to work anymore, and because I can't go shopping, I can't go to a restaurant, I can't do anything in the physical space without wearing a mask or getting a vaccine, I don't know if I'm going to be driving that much longer, because I don't have anywhere to go. I'm under house arrest.
Well, I wonder how long it's going to be before the new cars that they send me to test drive come with advanced diaper assist technology, where the car can tell whether you're wearing your face diaper, and if not, then it won't start.
Or
and
if, that, it know, I'm joking, gonna, but, if it thinks you're going to, if it thinks you're going to sneeze, it shoots it at you like an airbag or something.
Right, right. I mean, I'm joking, but it's it's the world is so crazy. I could foresee something like that actually happening.
It's insane. What's going on in Virginia right now in terms of lockdown and face diapers?
Well, there's no lockdowns and haven't been for some time. And this is now anecdotal. This is just based on my regional experience here in the Roanoke, Virginia area. It seems that people are beginning to tire of the kabuki, even at places where for, I don't know, roughly the last 6 weeks or so, I was practically the only person showing my face at the supermarket. Now, they have a sign on the door that says, per local ordinance, masks must be worn, but I just ignore it and walk in, and they don't enforce it. But it was socially enforced. People would just wear it for one reason or another, I guess because they're watching CNN all day and hearing about the cases. But now that's dialing back a little bit, and I'm seeing more faces, and this is encouraging. And at my gym, where I know the owner, and she's a good person, and she's never insisted on the face diapering, well, they stopped all the kabuki. They, for a while there, were hitting you with an infrared thermometer when you came in to see whether you were about to croak and spread the Rona everywhere. And the staff had to wear the face diapers. Well, they're doing neither thing anymore, and it's totally normal in there. And there are only a handful of freaks who still wear the diaper. And they look like the freaks, which is what they should.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I saw, I reported this yesterday. There's a gym owner and several other gym owners that are talking about doing this as well. Said, put up a sign, said, if you get the vaccine, you can't come in the gym.
Excellent.
Exactly the opposite way, because he says, you know, so many people, after they get the vaccine, they are coming down with COVID and spreading COVID to other people. So we don't want you in the gym if you've had the vaccine.
Yeah. And speaking of that, how come it is that we don't hear hysterical ululations about the cases of the people who have coincidentally died, the healthy people, after having received the holy needle?
Oh, well, I think this whole thing about putting the pause on Johnson & Johnson was a very cynical PR move by these people. You had four different states, and you had four dozen people immediately come down with issues. Some of them had to be transported by ambulance. And so to tamp that down, they said, we're going to put a pause on it, but not addressing that. They didn't talk about those four dozen people. They said, well, we've had six people who've had blood clot issues. But if you look at the VAERS data, the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System that the CDC runs, you see that you've had about 800 people that have been reported to have blood clot issues. They're not talking about that. The whole thing is a head fake. The whole thing is a PR manipulation to get people to trust this stuff.
Well, it's worse than that, actually. I did a little article about it the other day and used the CDC's own numbers. In this country alone, since December, there have been approximately 3,000 deaths of people coincident to having received the jab. Now, that's a 9/11-ish number. Mm-hmm. It's also a number that puts into insignificance the number of people who were killed by, let's say, the rolling over Ford Explorers back in the 90s, the blowing up Pintos back in the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
If a car could reasonably be claimed to be responsible for that many deaths, there would have been an incredible bellowing hue and cry. Mm-hmm. But it's
or look at the Boeing 737, what is it, the Max, the Boeing
the
Max.
The 737 was, Max.
Yeah, 737, look
so,
at that.
You know, on the one hand, we have them absolutely exaggerating, willfully and deliberately, every so-called case, you know, a positive test, and implying that means the person's going to die, and taking every 95-year-old diabetic who dies as a case of the Rona deaths, you know, to plump up those numbers. But they're really being awfully shy about the number of people who are dying coincident to having received the holy needle.
That's right. And as some people pointed out, that number that we've seen, and, you know, they weren't putting out a mass vaccination for the entire quarter. But if you just take that quarter, that's not a full quarter of vaccination, but if you look at that, that's equivalent to the number of deaths after a vaccine that occurred over the last 11 years combined. And you have 87% of the people who have died either died within the first 48 hours or the first 24 hours or got hospitalized within the first 48 hours and died. So 87% of the people of those deaths, that happened immediately, and yet these people, I call them coincidence theorists.
Yeah, right. Right. And there's another aspect, too, that is relevant and people should think about, and it is that a lot of these people who've died were otherwise perfectly healthy young adults. That's now, right. for the That's most right. part, if you are an otherwise healthy young adult, somebody who's not eligible for Social Security, and you get the Rona, the chances of you dying from the Rona are practically nil. They're on the order of, what is it, 0.04 or something like that?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have that on the one hand, and you juxtapose this thing on the other, which is this vaccine, which we don't know what's in it and has not been tested, and we therefore have absolutely no idea what its effects could be. Killing otherwise healthy adults, and for whatever reason, there's just mute silence on the part of the fear organ media.
That's right. And the other thing that's unprecedented about this, besides the number of people who have died right away, and the tens of thousands, I think it was something like 30,000 people who have reported injuries, is that this typically, you don't usually see vaccine injuries for quite some time. But previously, the best case that we had, a correlation between injuries and the vaccine, was the H1N1 dance in the vaccine that was created, again, by Moncef Slaoui and Fauci back in 2009. Mm-hmm. That Pandemrix situation was notable because the symptoms started showing up within a year in children. But we're talking about stuff that is killing people or putting them in the hospital within 24 to 48 hours, and they completely suppress all of this information. It's unbelievable how Orwellian this propaganda has become.
Yeah, it really is. And God only knows what the numbers are going to be 3 months, 6 months from now, as we begin to see the manifesting of whatever this vaccine does to people. It's quite terrifying. And it startles me that people don't stop to think that it's one thing for a person who has a terminal illness, who has exhausted every conventional treatment, to go ahead and try something radical, something experimental, because after all, what have they got to lose? They're going to die, right?
That's right.
That's
yeah.
what they're facing. The choice is, I'm going to die, so I've got nothing to lose. Juxtapose that against this, where we have perfectly healthy people who have very little risk of dying from this thing, being mass-injected with an experimental treatment that has not been tested adequately, that has not been tested on people, whose ramifications we have absolutely no idea what they'll be. It is, as you say, it's Orwellian. It's very hard to understand what's going on.
When you look at the way that YouTube has really accelerated its censorship, especially now they're focusing on the vaccine stuff. And so I go to YouTube because I want to see, they always push little reports that are being done about the vaccines. And so I've got some stuff to play later in the show where they have a little pitch that's done by, it's typically a young female doctor that does all these pitches. And there's one of them pitching it to young, healthy people. Why should I get it if I'm young and healthy? Well, here's why you should get it, because you're young and healthy. Another one that talks about risks and downplays all of that, another young doctor who is doing that. So they have all these propaganda films, but they're ruthlessly purging channel after channel after channel for talking about vaccines. My channel's been purged yet again for the seventh time from YouTube. And that's the thing that they're focusing on right now. But it's absolutely amazing to me how Soviet style this propaganda has become, how ham-fisted it's become. And you talk about the risk involved with this. I think of it like leprosy, for example, right? Leprosy is something that's easily prevented. It's easily cured with antibiotics in the early stages, but if you let this thing take hold, it can be very serious. And so you have a situation where a very small part of the population that is elderly, obese, has other multiple comorbidities, when they are exposed to this and their immune system is not working properly, and if you put them in a hospital situation and you withhold effective treatment for them, which we know, things like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, you withhold that and you give them the preferred expensive drugs like remdesivir that don't do anything, these people get into a crisis situation and they die. And then they use that to further this panic and lockdown.
Right. And it is at this point, I think, inarguable that it is deliberate.
Yes,
and it is malicious.
It is.
We could go back to last year around this time, and we could give the benefit of the doubt, and we could say, well, people are exercising a degree of caution that perhaps is necessary because we really don't know what we're dealing with here. This really could be the Black Death. It could be very dangerous. I'm willing to give the benefit of the doubt a year ago. I'm not willing to give the benefit of the doubt any longer. These people know exactly what they're doing, and they are no different than Julius Streicher, the famous publisher of Der Stürmer back in the Germany of the 1930s, who fomented hysteria and hate for purposes that were evil. And that's what we're dealing with here.
That's right. Yeah, I gave up on Trump about the middle of the summer. It's like, okay, this is not about ignorance anymore. This is not about fear or panic. This is malicious. And so that's I've been on that train for a long time. This is flat out malicious. We know where this has gone. Not any idiot, and he's not a stupid person. No idiot could fall for this stuff that hard.
No, he's an opportunistic person. I feel the same way that you do, and I think it's extremely interesting that now he's very, very aggressively denouncing Fauci when it no longer matters, and at the same time, very aggressively promoting and pushing the vaccine.
That's right, because he thinks that's something he can get credit for. It's all about him. He's a narcissist. He thinks that he get, you know, this is my chief accomplishment. I saved the world. Even before the election, he's out there with that nonsense simulation that Fauci gave him when he created the executive order. You know, 2.2 million people are going to die. And he said, see, I saved 2 million people, because they had their numbers were at 200,000 at that point. So he was still bragging about that stuff. I had all these people saying, well, you better hope that Trump gets in there, because Biden is going to force the vaccines. I said, Biden is not going to force the vaccines. He's going to let the businesses do it. And that's the same thing I'm seeing from a lot of these Republican governors who are getting applause, like Abbott. They're not telling the businesses that they can't do this. They're encouraging the businesses to do that. They're simply saying, we're not going to do it. They don't want to do it. The New England Journal of Medicine said at the very beginning of this, we don't want to do this by law, because there'll be due process challenges and we'll lose those. So we'll let the businesses do it.
Well, the corporations, which of course are creatures of the government without any of the restraining effect of judicial process on them.
That's right. Right. Let's talk a little bit about, let's get back to one of your articles that we got here. What we've gained and lost along the way about new cars. Talk about that.
Yeah, that, you know, I'm kind of romantic about cars, and I know that you are as well.
Yeah.
And so while I completely acknowledge, because I'm not delusional, that modern cars have many virtues relative to the cars of the past, they are incredibly reliable. They start when it's 20 degrees outside. They almost never need any significant work for the first 100,000 miles, and all of that is wonderful. But they've become kind of anodyne and homogenous, and it's very difficult to establish an emotional bond with a car anymore in the way that you and I did when we were young and in high school, and all the previous generations before us, going back all the way to the era of the Model T did, when cars were kind of quirky and different and even recalcitrant. You had these stories, and I mentioned a couple personal ones in the article. You know, you kick the thing to get it to start sometimes, and it would actually work sometimes. All of the random funny things that used to happen that just kind of made us, it's sort of like, you know, you have a weird friend or a crazy uncle, and, you know, even though he's a pain in the butt, you know, you love the guy because he's just a character. And that used to be a quality that cars had, which they just don't have any longer.
You know, one of the cars that I own was a Triumph Spitfire. You talk
great
about
car.
A love-hate relationship. I mean, this is like
when it worked.
The girl that's constantly cheating on you, right? I mean, the thing, I loved it when it worked, and it was so slow, it was a real challenge to try to get this thing to accelerate, you know? So you had to shift at just the right points, and all of a sudden, it had a manual choke on it, but it was choking all the time and leaving me stranded in different places. But, you know, I still regret it after
memorable.
I sold that thing. I still regretted losing it.
yeah, you remember it. You know, most of these cars today, they're as forgettable as your last smartphone that you just threw away and got another one.
That's right. Right.
You know, and oh, there's something else, too, that I touch on in the story that's kind of interesting, and that is that, you know, you used to have a spectrum on the left and on the right. You had the very basic and crude cars on the left, and then you had the very high-end cars on the right, and everything's kind of meeting in the middle now, and you're really not getting that much difference no matter what car you buy. It's going to have power windows, locks. It's going to have climate control, air conditioning. It's even going to have a touchscreen. So, you know, what is the big difference between, say, a $20,000 car and a $40,000 car? And really, mostly, it's the price.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing to me, too, to go back and look at, because I saved the brochures of some of the cars that I bought 30, 40 years ago. And to go back and look at what some of the extra things that they added were, you know, like carpeting.
Yes, right.
Because, you know, we had cars that didn't have carpeting in it. Yeah, exactly. A radio. Yeah, it's got a radio in it. That's another option. This is a custom car here. Radio.
Yeah, so we've got it really good in some ways, but we've also got it really bad. And here's one of the ways that we've got it bad. Because these cars come with all of this stuff, the cars have gotten pretty pricey. And that serves as a deterrent for the next generation, the young kids who want to get their first car. They're so forbiddingly expensive, even used, that they can't afford it. You know, they don't have I remember after I got out of college, I bought a $700 Volkswagen, and that, you know, that was in the 90s. And I was able to drive around in that Volkswagen, you know, because I had $700. I wouldn't have had the equivalent in those days of $4,000 or $5,000 to buy a beater car, which is pretty much what you needed to get today to get anything that's operable.
I remember you had an article a couple of years ago, and we talked about it at the time, about what France is doing. They had a special category kind of for young drivers, entry-level drivers, so they could get a really scaled-down car that had a very low top speed. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I think they call them the sans voiture, which means you didn't have to have a permit or a license to get it. And it was essentially a short-range, short-distance, low-speed, basic little car. Trying to think if there's anything analogous to that in the United States. Probably the closest thing would have been something like, I don't know, an old Beetle from the 60s or the 70s, just without half the power. You know, I think the top speed of these cars in France is something like 30 miles an hour. So they're fine for, you know, going to meet your friends, going downtown. They're not fine for going out on the highway, but mm-hmm. who cares? You know, when you're 15 or 16 years old, all you want to do is go hang out with your friends, right?
That's right, yeah. Right. Yeah, we've lost a lot of that. And there was a certain rawness to it. There was a lot of fun, having to have that kind of a challenge. That's one of the reasons why I like my little convertible, because it gets you yep. out in the, you know, we always drive hermetically sealed up anymore, you know, the windows and the air
yeah.
conditioning on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I drive down the road and I smell the freshly cut grass or the dead skunk in the middle of the road. It's an interesting It's an interesting experiment.
You know, it is.
And it's
wonderful.
An immersive experience, right? It's much better than virtual reality or being sealed in a little metal box. I like that.
Yeah. That's one of the reasons, by the way, that I ride motorcycles. It's that same immersive experience that you're talking about being
yeah.
in the moment, outside, not in a hermetically sealed cage.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Well, you know, it's we'll be lucky if we can just keep our independence and our mobility, and if we've got a place to drive, I guess. That's what you and I are fighting for. It's
yeah.
just the mobility
well, you know,
and the liberty to go somewhere.
I'm a little bit optimistic. I'm optimistic about the transportation situation and the sickness psychosis situation, because I think they've pushed it too far too fast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think it has gotten to the point where a lot of people are beginning to say, you know, this sucks. I don't like this. This is unreasonable. And there is pushback. I'm hopeful that there's going to be more pushback.
Yeah. I think there is a turning that's happening now. My problem is that I was freaking out about this. I knew where it was headed even before they did it. I could see mm-hmm. that it was coming, that they were going to do it. And when they did it on that, you know, March the 13th, or Friday the 13th, and the following Monday over that weekend, you had
yep.
you had California and New York both locked down. And on that Monday,
yep.
I was just losing it. And I've been losing
yep.
it all last year. And it's like, come on, everybody, you know, we've got to fight. We can't let this happen.
Yep.
And now that it's happened, you got to do something about it. And I'm just kind of, well, I guess nobody's ever going to pay any attention to this. But it really has started to turn. It's hard for me, having looked at this and known about this for well over a year, because we're on day 404 since that Friday the 13th that
yep.
this all went out. And I was pushing back against this for like 60 days before that. So
yep.
to me, this seems like it's been going on forever. But it is a pushback that is happening now. People have, I think, finally had enough. I was just surprised, like Scott Atlas was at Stanford. He said, I'm surprised at how far they went, how quickly they went, and how everybody mm-hmm. just kind of laid over about all of this stuff. But now they're starting to wake up, I think.
Yeah, well, fear is a strong motivator. And the
yeah.
other thing that they've used is people's general benevolence. Most people
yes.
don't want to be responsible for hurting somebody else. And so if they're told by the authorities that they respect that, you know, if you don't wear a mask, you're going to kill Granny, you're going to do this, you're going to do that, they want to do the right thing. But I think people are beginning to realize that they have been manipulated and used, and that their best instincts have been perverted and seized upon as a tool by these evil people to get something that they want at their expense. And that is making people angry, and I'm very grateful that that's finally beginning to happen.
It's kind of like what John Cleese said last week, as he's making fun of Hank Azaria, you know, the actor.
Oh,
the
yeah,
Simpsons,
yeah, for
right?
apologizing, yeah.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
and so he apologizes and grovels to all the Indian people for doing a cartoon caricature. And so then John Cleese comes out and says, oh, well, I would like to apologize to all the white English people that I've made fun of. And,
right.
and in the follow-up to that, he said, yeah, you know, this all just began because we were trying to be nice to people. And he's had
yes.
it now at this point. So he's gone back to the kind of comedian he used to be, where he's not interested about people's feelings more than he is about being funny. But I think that's what it is. And you know, I looked at all this and I knew exactly what this is. This is never about trying to be nice to people. This is about 2 + 2 = 5. It's about dominating people, about the totalitarianism of that. It's been that from the very beginning. He's just catching on to, like, hey, this has really kind of gotten out of hand. And I think that's where people are with the lockdown.
Sure, because he's an entertainer. Right, you and I are analysts, and it's been our business, our professional lives, to look at this stuff, and that's why we understand it and see it more readily than the average person does. And it's not a function of intelligence; it's a function of this is what we do every day.
That's right.
Most people don't do that every
day. Right. They don't have the time.
So you know, they are they're easier to trick. Frankly, it's just like, you know, a person who really isn't that hip to the machinations of the finance department at a car dealership will go in there and get bamboozled and end up with you know some obnoxious loan that he had no idea what he was signing up for.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and that's and the other part of it is that's the weaponization of information, how they manipulate people through social media, but especially like we were talking about before, YouTube cracking down really hard and you know pushing out propaganda relentlessly and then censoring any other opinions so people don't hear another opinion. And that's the key thing that's
but they
made
do
this
know about
this.
They do know about the censoring and the suppressing. And again, I think that that's a good thing at this point. Mm-hmm. The hysteria of the efforts to tamp down anything that contradicts any official narrative is indicative of the insecurity of the people doing the censoring and the suppressing about their arguments and their position.
That's right. Yeah. Well, let's just hope that everybody catches on, stands up, goes back to living their life before these people get this thing locked in, cemented in concrete before the chains solidify on our legs and arms. Because if that happens, it's going to be, I mean, people in the Soviet Union were pretty cynical. They knew with Izvestia and with Pravda, you know, Izvestia was supposed to be news, Pravda was truth. They said there's no news in Izvestia and there's no truth in Pravda. They were very cynical and they understood that, but they were still, they still had the chains around their legs. And if we don't wake up to this soon, we're going to have those chains around our legs. It's going to be really hard to get them off.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Eric Peters. Again, you can find his excellent articles. We just covered the surface of three of the articles there, but you get an idea of what's happening there. And he's got reviews about real-world cars. I mean, we're not talking about the you know, the $3 or $4 million cars that are only affordable by the technocratic elite at epautos.com. Thank you so much for joining us, Eric.
You bet, David. Always enjoy it.
Thank you. All right. Have a good day. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Let's talk a little bit about nuclear war as a topic to warm your heart. That's something I've lived with all of my life, going back to the early days of elementary school and the Cuban Missile Crisis. And now that specter has been raised again by the U.S. Strategic Command, kind of casually putting out a tweet. Because I guess they're following the lead of Trump. let's just tweet about nuclear war. Casually tweeting out about U.S. adversaries conducting a nuclear strike as their least bad option. And this is what they had to say. The spectrum of conflict today is neither linear nor predictable. Well, that's great news, isn't it? When the people who are running your military and the nuclear response say they can't predict what's going to happen, and that it's not linear. In other words, this thing could exponentially get out of hand. So it's not linear, it's not predictable, tweeted U.S. Stratcom. They added, we must account for the possibility of conflict leading to conditions which could very rapidly drive an adversary to consider nuclear use as their least bad option, to which some people said, wait a minute, what option is worse than nuclear war? Good question. And why is this being done? When you look at what happened a week ago, just a couple of days after Biden was kind of slapped down by Putin, Biden hit Russia with another round of sanctions, said the Ron Paul Institute, including an attack on Russian currency. The reasons given for this newly declared national emergency, which Biden declared a state of national emergency last week, last Thursday. The reason for this new national emergency, how many national emergencies are we going to have, includes the seven-year-old return of Crimea to Russian control, and because that happened 7 years ago, it didn't just happen, and the still unproven allegations of Russian election meddling, hacking, and placing bounties on U.S. soldiers' heads in Afghanistan, which that was blown up as well. That narrative, that lie, was exposed and blown up. But anyway, he put on the state of declared a national emergency, part of an executive order, a week ago. And in response, the U.S. military raised us to DEFCON 3. And the EUCOM is at its highest level. So what are they doing? Well, you know, we've also not mentioned by many of these people is what I think the very troubling and provocative approach that the Biden administration took about this SolarWinds thing, which is not a Russian hack from the very beginning. They said, well, we know it's a Russian hack. Absolute nonsense. They hadn't had enough time to do that. You can't reliably do that. We've seen that because of the Vault 7 documents that were hacked from our NSA, CIA, all these different intelligence agencies, they got hacked. It turns out that they have a Vault 7 suite of programs that allows them to appear as if they are anybody. They can look like the Russians. They can look like the North Koreans. They can look like friends or enemies. And they have a program for that. There's an app for that. And so that app was exposed. And then even after all of that was exposed, even after we had the complete exposure about the lies of bounties by Russian soldiers, the lies about Russian influence in the election, all that stuff being exposed. And you have, this is not just people who support Trump saying this. You have people like Glenn Greenwald and Matt Taibbi, Caitlin Johnstone, a lot of people who absolutely are not conservatives, absolutely despise Trump, would say that this Russian hacking of the election is absolute nonsense. I mean, we can disagree with them on politics and on certain issues, but at least they're honest journalists, and they're calling out the mainstream media, New York Times, Washington Post, places like that, for the lies, talking about how absurd these lies are. So when we look at this and the response, immediately they said, well, SolarWinds, that's got to be the Russians because it made them look bad. But it wasn't the Russians. First of all, they couldn't know that. And secondly, if it was the Russians, why would the FBI raid the software developer here in Austin? It was because they had backdoor issues. The way the backdoors are put into the software were done in a way that looked criminal and intentional. Intentionally criminal. So they were investigated. So, but in light of all that, the Biden administration said, well, because of this, because of this so-called hack, we've considered that that is Russia, and we see that as an act of war, and then announced that they were going to do a cyber attack on Russia. And these are the same people during the Obama administration that said, if we determine that somebody has launched a cyber attack on us, we will treat that the same way as if they launched missiles at us, and a physical attack. And so they linked together physical attacks to cyber attacks and then said Russia had initiated that. So when you look at all of this, the state of a national emergency because of Russia, because presumably something that really hasn't changed in Ukraine with the Crimea, but Ukraine is blustering about that. And there has been now a movement of tanks and so forth by the Russians. What Ukraine is doing is to demand that they be given nuclear weapons or they be given the protection of NATO. as another tripwire that would get us involved in a nuclear war. So Caitlin Johnstone says the rising threat of nuclear war is the most urgent matter in the world, but nobody's paying any attention to it. In response to this tweet coming out of Stratcom, the statement which Stratcom called a preview of the posture statement that it submits to the U.S. Congress every year was a bit intense for Twitter, he said, and it sparked a lot of alarmed responses. This alarm was not due to any inaccuracy in Stratcom's frank statement, but due to the bizarre fact that our world's increasing risk of nuclear war barely features in mainstream media discourse. Stratcom has been preparing not just to use its nuclear arsenal for deterrence, but also to win, quote-unquote, a nuclear war should one arise. From, as she puts it, the entirely U.S.-created conditions which are neither linear nor predictable. The U.S. has been ramping up aggressions with Russia in a way that has terrified experts. The aggressions are further complicated by the increasingly tense fronts like Ukraine, which is threatening to obtain nuclear weapons if it isn't granted membership to NATO. Either of these would increase the risk of conflict, even nuclear conflict. Stratcom Commander Charles Richard told the Senate Armed Services Committee on Tuesday that China's nuclear capabilities are advancing so rapidly that they're not even bothering with intelligence vetted more than a month ago in their briefings because it's probably already out of date. And so his response was to urge an emergency upgrade to America's nuclear infrastructure. So we have a situation where on the Ukraine border, there's a lot of blustering by both the government and of Ukraine and by the Biden administration, and the Russians are moving tanks, and they've already been seen putting special markings, white markings on their tanks because they have the same tanks that Ukraine does, so they can identify friend from foe and sending them via rail. So there's a buildup right there on that border. We have China blustering and getting more and more belligerent and encroaching not only on the Philippines, but also talking about how they're going to take over Taiwan. And the U.S. is looking at possibly taking on both of them. And what it, to me, is even more concerning is the fact that we're in this fourth turning. We're already in the midst of it. That's why these things are happening. Every 80 years, society is reorganized significantly. Usually involves economic crisis. We're there. Massive structural reorganization, so we have a new normal. And as part of that, we usually have a war. Why? Because these people need to have us fighting an external enemy. But of course, they've also got us fighting each other in a way that is very, very unusual. We didn't see this type of thing happening at the last fourth turning of the Great Depression and World War II. We were not fighting amongst ourselves here in America. So, you know, we look at the different fourth turnings. We had the Great Depression, World War II prior to that. We had the Civil War prior to that. We had the American Revolutionary War. And as I've said, I believe that we could have a world war because this is happening everywhere, this it's reorganization. We could have a world war. We could have a civil war here in America. And we could have a revolutionary war. We could have all three of those things at the same time. And, you know, as part of the external war, the world war, that could be a nuclear war. Go back to Caitlin Johnstone. She said the fact that those in charge of U.S. nuclear weapons now see both Russia and China as a major nuclear threat, and the fact that U.S. cold warriors are escalating against both of them is horrifying. This is to say nothing of tensions between nuclear-armed Pakistan and nuclear-armed India, or between nuclear-armed Israel and its neighbors, or between nuclear-armed North Korea and the West. He said, people like to think that every nuclear-armed country has one of the buttons. Remember when Trump said, he's got a button, talking about North Korea's Kim Jong-un. He's got a button, but I've got a button and mine works. Well, there isn't one button on the president's desk, as she points out. There's not a button with which you can consciously choose to start a nuclear war after careful deliberation. Have we ever had any careful deliberation about our wars? Not in my lifetime. But it doesn't work that way. There are thousands of people in the world controlling different parts of different nuclear arsenals who could independently initiate a nuclear war. Even if you think that isn't going to happen here in America, that we've got the kind of controls that's not going to happen. Well, if somebody who wants to attack us doesn't have those kind of controls, if somebody in Russia or China pushes one of their thousands of buttons, then you better believe that the button will be pushed over here. So there are thousands of people, as she points out, in the world controlling different parts of different nuclear arsenals who could independently initiate a nuclear war. Thousands of buttons, and it only takes one. The arrogance of believing that anyone can control such a conflict safely for years is astounding, but that is the position of the U.S. government. As Joel Skousen has said many times, the U.S. government is hoping and planning take the first hit and to survive. They have a Dr. Strangelove kind of mentality. Been there a long time, and it's thoroughly entrenched. And it's also, they have their, the deep underground bases that they have for each other, their continuity of government. Perhaps you noticed in this last year that they don't care anything at all about us. Everything is about them and their needs. A 2014 report found that it would only take a detonation of 100 nuclear warheads to throw 5 teragrams of black soot into the Earth's stratosphere that would remain there for decades, blocking out the sun and making the photosynthesis of plants impossible. Do it even better than Bill Gates, right? This could easily starve every terrestrial organism to death if it didn't die of radiation. China has hundreds of nuclear weapons. Russia and the U.S. have thousands. On a recent Tucker Carlson Tonight appearance, former Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard did a solid job of describing the horrors of nuclear war and the very real possibility it could be inflicted on us due to America's insane brinksmanship with Russia. She spoke earnestly about how, quote, such a war would come at a cost beyond anything we can really imagine. She said hundreds of millions of people dying and suffering and seeing their flesh being burned from their bones. But, said Caitlin Johnstone, if you look at the replies to Gabbard's tweet in which she shared a clip, a short clip from the interview, the people replied, she said, you'll see a deluge of commenters accusing her of hyperbole, saying that she's being soft on Putin. And these are Democrats. And admonishing her for appearing on Tucker Carlson. It's like they can't even hear what she's saying. They can't hear how real this is or how significant it is. That's right. Now, as we look at our lives, as we look at the fear and the panic that has been engendered upon us over this last year, tomorrow is not certain for any of us. One of the reasons why we don't put our hopes in vaccines, we put our hopes in Christ. Biden's orderly Afghan exit is already in peril as suicide attacks rock Kabul. Azir Hedge asks, are we witnessing the beginning of a massive upsurge in violence that's going to be coming? And interestingly enough, I had not seen it. When I saw this, the delay, you know, I guess it was last week, or was it the beginning of this week? I think it was last week that I had the individual I talked about for the first time last week, and I think maybe he was this week. I had Dan McKnight talking about how can we end these wars. Let's make sure that we're going to have the state legislatures pass legislation saying you're not going to take the National Guard from the state and send them off to a foreign war unless you have a constitutional declaration of war. Get that first. You can at least do that out of respect to the soldiers' lives. And, of course, they're getting a lot of pushback from the Pentagon. And when I look at what Biden is doing, when I reported on what Biden was doing in terms of going from the, you know, May 1st was the deadline that Trump set up so he wouldn't have to deal with it, punted it just like he did getting out of the Paris Climate Accord. He made sure that the exit from the Paris Climate Accord was the day after the election, and he did that years ago. Well, he did the same thing about getting out of Afghanistan. He punted on that as well and made it May 1st. And so Biden said he's going to get out on September 11th. And the Taliban said, well, if you do that, we're going to stop the ceasefire on May 1st. And I said at the time, I think that Biden is deliberately doing this because he doesn't want to get out. He wants to sound like, oh, yeah, I think it'd be a good idea to do it on the 20th anniversary of 9/11. And we can pull out at that point in time, and even 20 years. Wouldn't that be great? Except that by delaying this, it will increase the violence. The delay will cause an upsurge in the violence, as the Taliban has said. Then they can react to that and say, well, because of this, we just can't leave. I think that's been the plan all along. I think that's exactly what this delay of 4 months is about. What difference does it make to him, 4 months or not? If you really wanted to get out, you'd get out. You wouldn't even wait till May 1st. I mean, somebody elected me president, first thing I do is say, all right, this war is done, that war is done, that war. You didn't even have a declaration of this stuff. But no, they want to delay so they can create violence so they can have a reaction and stay. And finally, I saw somebody came to the same conclusion in here. A number of pundits, says Ear Hedge, have noted that Biden's handling of Afghanistan is a recipe to ensure that America will yet again find a reason to stay and to stay forever. I agree. So they said, are we witnessing the beginning of a massive upsurge in violence? Just hours after the announcement of the postponement, a suicide bomber attacked a convoy of Afghan security personnel, wounding 7 people in the capital of Kabul. Said, the first attack in weeks in the capital, even as targeted killings have escalated, and Afghanistan's security personnel have come under relentless attacks by the Taliban insurgents. So I think this is, again, a propaganda move to make sure that they can remain there. Other unrest, other war that is happening, we see that Israel has Israel strikes near Damascus, Syria, after Syrian missile lands near their nuclear reactor. Looking at what is happening in Mexico, part of the drug wars that have escalated there and created not just criminal gangs, but the kind of violence that you have more people being killed there than being killed in Iraq and Afghanistan by far. And now, interestingly enough, they used the drug cartel there that has taken the place of the Sinaloa cartel after El Chapo has been taken out. They used a couple of rigged drones. Kind of think of an improvised explosive device, except these are flying improvised explosive devices. They took drones. They'd found a couple of these a while back. They had plastic explosives, ball bearings, and they had drones were loaded with these types of things. It looks like they've now deployed that against some police who were blocking a road. All right, let's take a quick look at gun control as we're talking about war with the American people, because we've had so many of these politicians running on the Democrat side saying that, we could take your guns because we've got nuclear weapons. Remember that? We got nuclear weapons. We got fighter jets. And you had people like Eric Swalwell and Robert Francis O'Rourke, who goes by the alias Beto, and Joe Biden, all saying that. Yeah, we got fighter jets. We can take your guns with all those fighter jets. How's that working out for you in Afghanistan? How are all these asymmetric wars working out for you? But before we get to that, a guns at church bill goes to the Senate floor in Tallahassee. This is a Florida bill that would allow people with concealed weapons and licenses to bring guns on properties that are shared by churches and schools, because you have a lot of churches, as they're getting started, will meet in schools and in places other than places like Austin. Austin used to welcome the revenue for that. But then they decided, at least a church that I have firsthand knowledge of in Austin, they decided that they would revoke that. They'd rather not have the money than to have a filthy bunch of Christians occupying an empty building on a Sunday that they owned. Very much like these Hollywood studios, aren't they? So they put a stop to that. But still, in some places like Florida, you'll have public areas where they will let churches rent schools on the weekends and hold their church services there. And so that creates a problem because going back, I think it was the Clinton administration where they passed that ridiculous law saying if you've got a gun within 1,000 miles, or 1,000 miles, that's pretty close, within 1,000 feet of a school, you're committing a felony. And so you can't, if you have a church that's meeting in a school, that still applies even though the school is not in session. So to get rid of that, you have a bill introduced in Florida that would allow concealed weapons at churches, synagogues, mosques, if they are meeting on school property when they're closed. And said, we're going to give, why, we're giving one of the safest subgroups in our society the ability to carry. This is not the Wild West, but listen to what the Democrat minority leader in Florida had to say. This guy's name is Gary Farmer. He said, proponents, well, this is the News for Jacksonville article. They said the proponents, like this Democrat Senate minority leader, Gary Farmer, paint a picture of people rising up to take out bad guys as not being real. Here's what he had to say. He said, I go back to this notion that if we do away with gun-free zones and everybody's packing a firearm, if a bad person starts shooting, well, you know what? The good guys will rise up and save us, said the Democrat minority leader, Farmer. He said, folks, that has proven to be a fallacy. There hasn't been any Dirty Harry or John McClane or Rambo that has come to the defense of anyone in any of these mass shootings. Are you kidding me? I mean, we're talking about a church context here. Maybe you get a clue about that. This guy, this is one of the most bold-faced lies. Well, we've got some other bold-faced lies coming up in some of the vaccine commercials that they're airing on YouTube by these young female doctors. I'll play for you. They're pretty bold-faced, but this is a bold-faced lie. They don't call them out on it on the newspaper. I mean, it's so obvious. We've had two church shootings in the last few years here in Texas. And in both of those, you had somebody with a gun stop it. Both of those. So you had the one in Sutherland Springs where the guy was on the outside of this church building just, you know, spraying it with bullets constantly. And another guy, good guy with a gun, heard that and was notified of that. He got his AR-15 and shot the guy and ran him off, and the guy pulled over and died from that. So it's a good guy who ran him off. That happened there. Then we had another church shooting. We had a guy who was a homeless individual, had some mental issues, and the people at that church, and I think, was that like up in Dallas or Fort Worth, was it, Travis, you remember? I think it was up in Dallas or Fort Worth area. And they had helped this guy, but he had mental issues. He was homeless, and living on the streets. And he came in dressed up really weird. One of the people there at the church had a self-defense class. I might have had a firearms business or something like that, but he had done training for a lot of the people there. So they had several people there who were carrying concealed. And they were watching this guy. They were kind of engaging him, and one guy was close to him. He had under his trench coat, he's dressed up really weird, he pulled out a rifle and shot the first person. But he got one shot off, but then they took him out. That person died. But there would have been a lot of people who had died if he hadn't been taken out. Now, how can you have these two high-profile church shootings here in Texas that were national news, and you've got this liar in Florida, the Democrat minority leader, saying, folks, that's never happened. You've never had a situation where, and they're discussing allowing churches to have people who can carry concealed to protect if they're meeting on a school property during the weekend. Unbelievable how these people lie. And you know, those two cases are not even the best case. Going back to the 1990s, I remember Joseph Farrow was selling a book, and I interviewed the guy a few years ago, Charles van Wyk out of South Africa. I did a report, which now has been pulled down by YouTube because they cancel everything that I do. It was called Five Bullets to Save 1,000 People. And it was a guy who was a missionary, and he said at first he would not carry a gun because he wasn't convinced that as a Christian he should be able to shoot people in self-defense. But then he saw how violent things were getting as the black Marxists under the Mandelas were shooting people, attacking people because of the color of their skin, kind of where we're going to be in a few years. And this was an appeal on a book in the 1990s appealing to churches in the U.S. to start arming and defending themselves with concealed carry because he said, you're a soft target. But he began to realize that he needed to do that to defend innocent life, including even his own, if necessary. And so he learned how to use the firearm. And he was visiting a very liberal church, had over 1,000 people. That church later on, because after the Marxists got in power, they had their Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and all you had to do was come forward and talk about what you did, and then they'd give you a get-out-of-jail-free card. So their Marxist minions came forward and said, yeah, that day we selected that church because we figured it was wealthy, it was liberal, there wouldn't be anybody carrying a gun, and they were going to kill everybody there. And they had about a dozen people. They had hand grenades as well as fully automatic weapons, and they began by throwing the hand grenades in the church building and killed a bunch of people. They killed somewhere between 50 and 100 people. Because they threw the hand grenades in and they just started spraying the crowd with fully automatic fire. He was all the way in the back of the church. He had a revolver with 5 shots. And he stood up and he took a shot. And he thought, I'm not going to hit anything from here. So he went out the very back and came around to the side to engage them. And then he got down and took a shot again. And they ran away. And at the Truth and Reconciliation hearing, they said, well, they thought that they were under attack from multiple sources. And the first shot that he took from way in the back hit. He didn't even know he hit somebody. And so they had one person who was hit. Then they started catching fire from a different direction. They thought they had a bunch of people that were protecting the church, and they ran away, even though they had grenades, they had fully automatic weapons, and there was about a dozen of them. One guy with 5 shots. Saved 1,000 people, and he only had to use 2 of them. So this Democrat, this disgusting individual, who's going to have blood on his hands with those kinds of lies, and the paper there in Jacksonville, Florida. Let me tell you what it was. News for Jax, J-A-X. Well, they don't know Jack crap, do they? Now, on the other end of the spectrum, you have this guy, Mark McCloskey, the St. Louis personal injury lawyer who had his very wealthy, he and his wife in front of their mansion. You saw them ridiculously holding the guns. I couldn't believe that when Karen sent that to me. I thought that was a joke. It was kind of a joke. If you're certainly they became heroes to the Republicans, to Trump and others. And now he's thinking of running as a Republican in a Senate bid. And he was a Democrat personal injury lawyer. Became famous by brandishing the gun, he and his wife, in a very absurd way. And when I covered it at the time, I said, that's fine. You have a right to protect yourself. But you also have the responsibility to learn how to use this thing. And to learn something like, you know, muzzle control, things like that. I mean, come on. This is, and yet he became a real folk hero. So as Roy Blunt is going to be retiring in Missouri, this gun waiver became, as they pointed out in Politico, a cause celeb for conservatives, with Trump retweeting him. Because why not? You know, Trump probably has never held a gun either, right? So now this guy may run because that's his claim to fame. You vote for somebody like that, you deserve what you get. All I can say. And then going back to the what I was talking about with Afghanistan, how this thing goes on forever. There's an article on Reason Magazine. The Myanmar protests show that an AR-15 will protect a lot more freedom than a slingshot. But really what this article is about is the purpose of the Second Amendment. When I ran as a candidate for Congress, and I did it simply so I'd have an opportunity to talk to people about the issues. One of the issues that was really key for me was the Second Amendment. I felt like You know, at the time, Gun Owners of America and Larry Pratt was there. He was doing a good job, but most people were not really paying attention to that as much as they were the NRA. And I felt like the NRA was doing a disservice. For years, they had focused simply on gun and Second Amendment as being for hunting. Then they broadened it out a little bit to talk about self-defense, but they still were not talking about the core issue of what the Second Amendment is about. Second Amendment is about having an armed citizenry instead of a permanently standing army, and the ability to be able to defend the citizenry against enemies foreign and domestic. So an armed population as a deterrence to this. And I would always have these people would like to engage me on that because I would make that very clear. That was what my position was. And I had more than one reporter who mocked that idea, said, "Oh, really? Same things that we're hearing from Eric Swalwell and Biden and Beto. Oh, yeah? Well, you know, the military's got these weapons and yada, yada, yada. Take a look at what has happened in Afghanistan or Iraq or any of these other places. Take a look at what happened in the Warsaw Ghetto. We had people who had no weapons at all. They got something to knock a guard out with, and they got his pistol. Then they used that pistol to get better weapons, and they kept a lot of German panzer tanks tied down for a very long time until they burned the whole city down. That's the only way they could get control of that situation, by burning the entire city down on April the 19th. What good is an AR-15 against an oppressive government armed with tanks and bombers? That's a question that gun owners often get asked, says Reason, as if the destructive power of the modern state is a mic drop argument. That's the way the Democrats used it, against private weapons ownership. Well, if you look at the story coming out of Myanmar, they say every day, said the New York Times, every day when Ko Win Kwa goes out to demonstrate against the Myanmar military, he carries his slingshot and a supply of rocks as ammunition. What began as peaceful protests after the February the 1st coup rapidly grew into resistance movement, with citizens defending themselves using slingshots, homemade air guns, old hunting rifles, and firebombs. Reuters emphasized that a loosely organized group, as they called it, armed with a few hunting guns made by village blacksmiths, catapults, and some air guns and Molotov cocktails, were no match for forces that were hardened by decades of conflict and equipped with combat weapons. But despite the paucity of their arms and the lack of training, the fighters gave the government forces a day-long battle. They had to turn, at least for the time being, to makeshift weapons because the regime spent years trying to keep the population disarmed so that it wouldn't have to face serious resistance. In Myanmar, civilians are not allowed to possess any firearms. There were no gun licenses issued under the totalitarian Burma Socialist Program Party government starting from 1977, but only those who were fully-fledged party members and who were serving on duty in the party. After 1988 and a pro-democracy uprising, the military revoked all gun licenses and recalled guns. Denied legal access to guns by a brutal government that feared resistance, the people of Myanmar are still willing to fight, but they're scrounging tools to do so wherever they can be found. And, of course, that is what's happening in Afghanistan and other places. And you wind up with a situation, and here's the dangerous thing. Just as we were talking about nuclear weapons at the beginning, mutually assured destruction, you have an American government that is willing, evidently, to pull the trigger on a nuclear war. And we have, with the Second Amendment, the population being armed is meant as a deterrent. You don't want to have a civil war. You really don't, if you're rational. I don't know that our government is rational. I don't know that our government wouldn't prefer to have an Afghanistan America, the United States of Afghanistan here domestically. I'm not sure that they wouldn't want that, just as I'm not sure that they wouldn't want to have nuclear war either. In Hong Kong, protesters shot bows and arrows and hurled petrol bombs from Barricade University campus as police charged and charged again, firing tear gas and blue liquid from water cannons after a fiery overnight clashes, as NBC reported back in 2019. Hong Kong Polytechnic University campus looked more like a fortress with barricades and black-clad protesters, manning the ramparts with improvised weapons like bricks and crates of firebombs and bows and arrows at the ready. These were Hong Kong's pro-democracy protesters. They waved signs that said, "We need the Second Amendment." Hong Kong residents don't have legal protections for their right to bear arms. And so when you look at all of that, and you look at the boasting of people like Eric Swalwell, you look at the fact that the U.S. is willing to have an unending war in Afghanistan, and quite frankly, I think they're willing to do that here as well. There's been no ceasefire agreement in Afghanistan, high levels of insurgent and extremist violence, despite repeated pleas from senior U.S. and international officials to reduce the violence and to advance the peace process. They know they're losing, but they won't leave. They won't leave. Rand Paul said, before all this lockdown stuff happened, he said, they don't control most of the country. They have no prospect for winning. Why are we continuing to do this? It makes absolutely no sense. Well, nothing that they do has to make sense if they have enough power, right? And we're going to talk about America held hostage, about vaccines. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back. Stay with us.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Welcome back, and I have some letters here from listeners. I think you'll find it interesting. I haven't been able to do this for a couple of days, but I do appreciate the correspondence that I get. You can send that to davidknightshow@protonmail.com. davidknightshow@protonmail.com. Of course, you can also use PayPal to send us money via that email address, davidknightshow@protonmail.com. Or you can go to Subscribestar. You can sign up for a continuing amount on a monthly basis. It starts at $5, and you can pick any amount that you want. That is davidknightshow@subscribestar. You can also make individual contributions there. We take contributions, as you saw in the ad, Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, P.O. Box. You'll find all of those links, as well as links to the show, because it's very important that you share the information. I'm doing this because I want to get this information out. I'm very concerned about where our country is going. I'm very concerned about this vaccine that is rolling out. So please get that information out. Try to produce information that you can use to your friends and relatives. I have one individual here writing who is a medical doctor, still, even as a medical doctor, not able to convince his relatives not to get the vaccine, telling them that it's not tested, telling them that it is a very new and novel approach, totally untested, and yet, you know, there's only so much that you can do to people. But again, if you don't tell people, it's on you. If you tell people and they do it anyway, there's nothing you can do about it. This letter, and actually you've got Vince Agnelli, who has gotten his book published, and we're going to have him on to talk about that. I think it's, is it next week that we have Vince coming? Anyway, we'll have Vince on to talk about his book. Vince Agnelli at New Virginia I think it's newvirginiaplan.com is a website, but we'll have him on to talk about that as well as his book. He sent me a quote since we were just talking about Nazis and authoritarian government. I mean, that's not cliche here. These are things that actually happen. It's a very effective pattern of tyranny, and we must not be shamed into not talking about what we've learned from history, from what the Nazis did, what Stalin did. It's not hyperbole to talk about what these people did, because these are the plans that are rolling out right now. He said, put some stuff in here about money, because it was actually about money. It was a quote that he sent me from Edwin Black, who wrote a book called The Nazi Nexus. Indeed, the last monthly rent check was given by a Reich representative to a U.S. Army officer in occupied Berlin in 1945. He told the Army man, please give this check to Mr. Watson. And the writer of the book said, so why did IBM do this? It was never about anti-Semitism. It was never about National Socialism. It was always about the money. About the money. And then he had this quote from Stephen Holbrook. Gun control and the Third Reich. Meanwhile, the regime, let me just change the, see how much this sounds like, rhymes with what we're going through right now. So I'll just take out the historical nouns. Meanwhile, the regime enhanced Biden administration, requiring all Americans to report personal information to the authorities. The Biden administration's order established a registration card for each person with information on residence, convictions, motor vehicles, and vaccination. A further decree provided that Americans must register their assets if they exceeded $5,000. We are so accustomed to living without rights and awaiting apathetically for further disgraceful acts that it hardly upsets us anymore. That's right. Now, of course, the real quote was not about Americans, but you notice how close it is. The real quote was, the regime enhanced laws requiring all Germans to report personal information to the authorities. The Reich Registration Order of January the 6th, 1938 established a registration card for each person with information on residence, convictions, motor vehicles, and not vaccination, but emigration. A further decree provided that Jews must register their assets if they exceeded 5,000 marks. Not dollars, which was another job for the punch card machines run by IBM. So here, it would be facilitated. They'd say, well, we got a free app from Microsoft. You just put it on your phone, and it'll give us all the information that we need. It'll give us all the registration of your assets, your motor vehicles, your convictions, your vaccination records, and so forth. See, they make it so much easier now, don't they? Yeah, you'd have to put all that together yourself to show the Nazis. Now the Nazis will help you to do it. They'll even give you a free app on your Big Brother device. And so at that point in time, it was the punch card machines run by IBM to keep track of that. And now they've got the free apps from Microsoft. That's exactly what is happening. The coronavirus rollout of electronic bracelets to start in May in Israel, where the government there has become the monsters that they fought. On Tuesday, a spokesperson for a company called Supercom said that they have 5,000 kits ready to be deployed as soon as the government wishes. Peggy, who sent this to me, said the entire world's population is living in a prison. This is what they're doing. I mean, just take a look at the picture of this device. See if you can find this. Coronavirus rollout of electronic bracelets to start in May. Travis, look at this picture here of the bracelet. Oh, maybe that's too much light. But there it is. Okay. And it's a kind of detention bracelet that they have for house arrest that they've used a long time. But now they've got it linked up to a smartphone, and they're ready to do this for people who are traveling, coming into Israel. And so they said that this bracelet being put out by Israelis who are fully vaccinated, who have recovered from the virus, are exempt from the quarantine if they're traveling, but others will be required to isolate, imprisoned, at home, wearing a device or in a state-run prison. Now they call it a facility. The bracelets have been described by health authorities as a key part of the strategy to prevent new coronavirus variants from abroad spreading in the country. So they said on Tuesday, an official for the corporation making the app, Supercom, said it has the 5,000 kits ready to go, ready to be deployed as soon as the government wishes, according to the outline approved by the Knesset. Children under the age of 14 are not going to be required to wear a bracelet to quarantine at home, while adults might be exempt on a case-by-case basis for special humanitarian reasons. And the person who wrote the article for the Jerusalem Post's name was Aaron Reich. I don't wonder if he's Aaron Reich III. They have become the Nazis that they fought. According to the company, the bracelets were in high demand. More than 90% of incoming travelers opted for the program, and it was accompanied by a very high satisfaction rate, said IBM. Oh, yeah, they love these punch codes, punch cards that we've got here, the Hollerith codes. And in Australia, the federal government has torn up four Victorian government deals with the Chinese. You know, the Belt and Road Initiative that we talked about, and how the dictator Dan Andrews in the state of Victoria in Australia had coincidentally signed big deals with the Chinese government before he instituted the Chinese-style lockdown. Now the central government, the federal government, has destroyed those deals. And as a person who sent this to me said, well, now what happens? What happens to all of these projects that they got started, that they have not finished? Go ahead and pull that off and get some audio from that.
And Aussie winemakers are among the big winners.
Still getting some audio from that, Travis. Okay, thanks. Let's talk about America held hostage on this day, 404. America held hostage. More Americans now fear illegal immigration and COVID. Well, that's good, because most people don't seem to be worried about illegal immigration. So if that's a bigger worry than COVID, that means that it's really pretty small. 48% of those polled believe that illegal immigration is a very big problem, while 47% consider the corona outbreak to be their most pressing concern. And I guess you can see that, Breitbart is talking about the hypocrisy of Fauci and others who are locking us down, leaving the border completely open, bringing in people who they don't even care to test them, transporting them on airplanes without any of the stringent rules that Americans have to follow to travel domestically on airplanes. I mean, evidently, they don't think it's the corona is a big problem either in the Biden administration. Nearly three-quarters of Republicans, 72%, say illegal immigration is a major problem. Democrats are only at 29%, but that's up from 15% a year ago. So twice the number of Democrats think that immigration is a problem under Biden than thought that it was a problem under Trump. That's kind of interesting. UK is refusing to accelerate the reopening despite COVID deaths dropping below road accident fatalities. That's right. More people are dying on the roads than from coronavirus. On Monday, the UK recorded four deaths that they attributed to coronavirus, while they had five deaths from road accidents. The government has continually insisted it'll prioritize data and not dates, but that doesn't seem to be the case. And everywhere you look, the government is hiding the data. They're hiding the data in Canada, for example. As I pointed out, I think it was yesterday, trial of Pastor James Coates. They will not provide the data. Even after, by the time he comes up for trial, the beginning of May, it will have been 14 months, but they say, well, we don't have enough time to put that data together. They didn't have any data before they did the lockdown. They didn't keep any data during the lockdown. They're not going to produce any data after. But the real data is the live human experiment where the people at church showed up by the hundreds or thousands. I don't know how big that church is, just like in California, to show they could live their lives without any of these rituals and not be involved. And there were nobody died in any of those churches. they had in the California church, they had somebody who was in his 80s died because he couldn't get medical treatment because they shut down the hospitals for the coronavirus pandemic. Last week, Boris Johnson claimed that lockdown restrictions and not vaccine rates were to thank for the country's plummeting COVID cases, despite data showing that cases were already falling before the successive lockdowns. Yes, it is starting to disappear, and that's why I played the report months ago of what happened with the H1N1. That was the question a year after all that stuff started. Fauci and Slattery were very disappointed. They were only able to get about 25% of the people to take their emergency vaccine that they rushed to market, that then showed how dangerous it was, with children developing symptoms within a year of narcolepsy, catalepsy, and other life-destroying illnesses. Some people have subsequently committed suicide because they can't do anything. If they're going to fall asleep unexpectedly anywhere, they can't drive a car, they can't operate any machinery, there's so many things that are closed to them, they can't have a life. One person, as they, and this happened to the young children first, they were the canaries in the coal mine. But, you know, they rushed that vaccine to market, and then a year later you had news reports saying, what happened to the swine flu? We haven't heard anything about the swine flu for a year. It was the only thing that everybody was talking about a year ago, but now it's just disappeared. So hopefully that's going to be the case. There was a social media video from the UK where family relatives are filming an exchange with hospital people. I didn't play it because it's like 9 minutes long, and they're very upset. There's a lot of language to be beeped out of it, but it's just a lot of yelling and screaming. I can give you the essence of it. The bottom line is that they have an elderly relative who they knew would not take the COVID test because he did not want that probe. And they were saying, well, he's got a COVID test. And then they got them to admit on camera, he hasn't got the COVID test. And they said, so therefore, you've assumed that he's got COVID. Do you want him to have COVID? Oh, yes, they do. And so they got the police involved. And they said he's got respiratory issues, so we just assume that he's got COVID. We haven't tested him, but we assume we know that he's got. They did a clinical diagnosis, which is how this whole thing began. Then they pulled in the bogus PCR tests. So they said, well, she said his oxygen has dropped, and so we know that it's COVID. She said he's got COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Please let me get my dad out. Let me see my dad. Let me take him out. You put down on his paperwork that he's in a ward. He's COVID positive. And now you're saying we need to do a test to ascertain if he's COVID positive? You falsified the information on his paperwork. So it's a very long exchange. It's about 9 minutes long. But we know this is happening. This is happening everywhere. As a matter of fact, on LifeSite News, they had the Public Health Ontario has now admitted that they are magnifying their PCR tests with a cycle threshold of 40. And, of course, if you don't have a viral load that is high enough to trigger it before you get to there, and if you don't have any symptoms, you're not contagious. They said, some scientists have done this, and, of course, Fauci even admitted. They don't mention in the LifeSite article that Fauci said he shouldn't go above 30. But the article done by a couple of scientists that they reference in a Canadian study said that if someone is truly infected and could be contagious, it's detected at less than a cycle threshold of 24. Now that's a magnification of 2 to the 24th power. Each time they run this through, they double it, and so a cycle of a threshold of 24 means that they're doubling it 24 times. So that's 16.7 million magnification. But they said when the threshold is set to a higher limit, let's say 37, the test may only be detecting dead genetic fragments of the virus. Well, all the genetic fragments are dead, but it's just detecting fragments of perhaps from a previous infection or even fragments that were simply picked up from the environment that pose no risk to the individual, and certainly no risk to the people around them. A virologist at the University of California, Juliet Morrison, told the New York Times last August I covered this then, that any PCR test with a cycle threshold above 35 would be too sensitive, potentially resulting in false positives. And Fauci had set it at 30. But what are they doing? They're going all the way to 40. So we talked about a cycle threshold of 24, which is a 2 to the 24th power. That's 16.7. If you go to the cycle threshold of 35 that they mentioned as being the upper limit, that is magnification of 34.3 billion times. But they're going all the way to cycle threshold of 40, which is 1 trillion magnification. Absolutely ridiculous. So they said that the public health of Ontario says the cutoff point for a positive result for Ontario's developed lab test is 38 cycles. This means that if the virus, remember, 35 was the upper limit that the New York Times went out, and they said, you know, if we were to do that, when they talked about it with the New York Times, they said, well, if we were to limit it to a, if we looked at the PCR tests and we look at how they're going over the threshold limit, that 90% of the people in their investigation in three states, in Massachusetts, New York, and Nevada, the New York Times said, So believe it, it's the New York Times. It's not me. In August, they said, looking at those three states, they're magnifying it through so many different cycles that up to 9% of the people testing positive had barely any virus as they went through the data. So if we have, if we apply that as they did to the people in Ontario, they say, well, instead of the 4,000 new daily cases, you would have 40 new daily cases. They said the cutoff point that they're using in Ontario is for positive, that is, if the virus is found at or before 38 cycles are completed, then the test is considered positive. The cutoff point for a negative result is 40 cycles. So they'll keep going, magnifying it. If the virus is detected between 38 and 40 cycles, we call this indeterminate. So they said for over a year, the government of Ontario has used a blanket, non-targeted, population-wide approach using measures that now appear to be at best arbitrary and at worst capricious. These have led to unnecessary death of seniors, of collateral damage to our society's mental health, deaths of despair, drug overdoses, alcoholism, suicidal ideation, and worse. Ontarians with severe illness, small business, and our economy have suffered immeasurable harm. And in Florida, they note, laboratories have to report their PCR cycle threshold along with their results. And that quote that I read about for over a year, that comes from a group of 9 prominent Ontario doctors and scientists in the fields of clinical medicine, biology, immunology, virology, epidemiology, and infectious disease. In other words, they're experts qualified to talk about this. Now, I have a letter here from a listener that I'm a small business owner. This is from Jane. I'm a small business owner. I have not gone along with the mandates in my state of Pennsylvania so far. It has been received as mostly good. We have a small group of local people that try to support local businesses that don't require masks. But she said, I'm also a per diem respiratory therapist, and I work on the quote-unquote front lines. I work at my local teaching hospital, which is a larger hospital in a small town with lots of rural surroundings. She said, COVID or whatever you want to call it, the group of symptoms is not the ordinary flu. She said, patients all have oxygenation issues. They start on oxygen, and the ones that get worse, their bodies demand oxygen increases, and we deliver as much oxygen as possible without ventilator until we can't maintain adequate oxygenation, and then we have to put them in a breathing tube in and place them on a ventilator. And she said, most have underlying conditions and an increased body mass index. In other words, they're obese, elderly, multiple comorbidities, and obese. Many that have had that we've had are in their 60s and very ill. I wish we had a doctor to advocate for alternative therapies, therapeutics. They pretty much all just get remdesivir and steroids. Some are participating in other pharmaceutical, quote-unquote, studies. Even though I work directly with these patients, I don't agree with the mandates and the gene therapy vaccine. And as I said before when I was talking to Eric, I believe that this is very much like leprosy. First of all, it's absolutely unconscionable that these blanket prescriptions would be put out there for everybody. But of course, you know, for years we've been putting fluoride in the water because some doctors and health officials said that they thought it was a good idea, and they mass medicate everybody. And I said, all of these years, why would you think that's a good thing? Even if you believed that drinking fluoride was good for your teeth, not just applying it, but, you know, drinking it. Because if you look at the fluoride toothpaste, it says, if you ingest this, call the poison center. Just saying. I mean, look at your fluoride toothpaste if you happen to have any. I don't use fluoride toothpaste anymore. But why would you think that ingesting it would be a good idea? And even worse, if you want to argue that even that is a good idea, then why would you mass medicate the population? Why would you give the same amount of fluoride to a child as you do to an adult? Do you give the same amount of aspirin to a child that you do to an adult, or pick any other kind of even over-the-counter medication? You always have a different dosage based on children versus a male adult. But you're going to give everybody the same amount of fluoride? And then it gets worse, because when you put it in the water, we don't know what the dosage is for anybody. You're going to mass medicate through the water supply system, then you don't know what dosage anybody is getting. So if you thought it was a good thing, you could be underdosing. If you think it's a bad thing, you could be overdosing somebody. And of course, the difference between a medicine and a poison is the dosage, right? So why would you ever do that? But we have embraced the idea that we're going to mass medicate people through the water supply, through fluoridation, for a long time. And so why wouldn't we just ham-fistedly apply a rule to save everyone? We're not going to distinguish between people who are elderly, who have comorbidities, who are overweight, and say they're the people who are at risk, so we're going to do special things for them. We're going to also make sure that you are not able to have access to a wide variety of therapeutics that have been reported by many, many doctors on the front lines saying that it's effective. So we're going to take all that away. We're going to lock you down. We're going to lock down everybody, even people that their own numbers say have a zero risk, until we can get a vaccine that's not been tested ready for you. That's where we are. And it's like leprosy, in the sense that leprosy is easily prevented. Leprosy is easily treated in the early stages. If you let it go too long, nothing treats it. And I think that's what we're seeing in the hospitals. And I think it's happening for money. I really do think it's happening for money. She goes on to say also, that they had a church. We're talking about church that was meeting in a school. That's now been shut down, not because they had people who are carrying concealed to protect the people, but it's now been shut down. She said they recently reopened for Easter. We did not attend because the church required a reservation and masks, and there was no walking around or singing allowed. So, yeah, do find another church. Find a church that is not so afraid. At this point, these people absolutely lack any discernment, and they also don't really have a heart to follow God. Because if you have that heart, you're not really worried about life. You're not, if you are that afraid, you could make the argument that, well, I shouldn't drive to church. Because, you know, in the UK, they still got everybody locked down, even though the number of deaths on Tuesday was less than the number of automobile deaths. It's all about the risk. They don't talk about the risk until they talk about vaccines. They say, well, you know, look, according to my data, that's only, one person out of a million that's happening to, and even though that data is not correct. But they start to talk about that type of thing. They never talked about that with COVID. The Germans have now gone into another lockdown. Bill introducing new binding lockdown rules for German states with high infection rates. What does that mean, high infection rates? Does that mean cases? Are these people sick? Is this your PCR test? What's your site? 40 or something like that? What does it mean to say an infection rate? Totally meaningless at this point. An infection rate that is over 1 in 1,000. They're going to lock it down. And 15 out of the 16 German states fall under the restrictions of that bill. The Social Democrat Party said, we are in a situation where too many people are sick and too many people are dying. Who are you to say that? You're going to make that determination for people? As sorry as we are, yes, they are a sorry lot, aren't they? As sorry as we are, reducing the number of contacts helps to break the third wave first. You know, we've had, we got to flatten the cave. Now we're going to break the wave. And I think, I mean, we've got to get these surfer dudes out of our public health departments controlling our lives. The left party, they call themselves, the left party faction's co-chair, Muhammad Ali, seriously, said, float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. Irresponsible, said Muhammad Ali. The fundamental rights of the people, the left will never accept that. We continue to reject your law. The liberal Free Democrats announced that they would file a complaint against the bill with the Constitutional Court. The planned curfews are not suitable measures, I said. So there is some political resistance. At least some people are using that for political advantage. That's one of the things that worked against us last year. The Democrats love locking everybody down over nothing or everything. The Republicans held their fire because it was their party that was doing it to us. Trump. The buck started with him. But, of course, nobody ever tried to apply any responsibility for any of this stuff to him. It was 4D chess. He was using the art of Sun Tzu on you. You fund what you want to happen. And he lavishly funded the lockdowns. He lavishly funded and incentivized financially the diagnosis of people. What is $1,000 invested in vaccine stock worth now? And this is a question by Zero Hedge. Because, you know, as I said, it's all about the money, isn't it? So if you had done this at the start of the pandemic, 404 days ago, if you had invested $1,000 in Novavax, you would have $16,500 today. If you'd put $1,000 404 days ago into Moderna, you would have $5,000 today. If you'd done it with BioNTech, the partner of Pfizer, you would have 3,247. The interesting thing is that Pfizer, your $1,000 would have grown to $1,122. So that's a 12% growth. That's hardly anything compared to the 1,550% return on investment that you would have had from Novavax. And of course, one of the reasons when you look at these return on investments, they said the staggering return on investment from Novavax and from Moderna was because they basically didn't have any revenue. They didn't really have any products until this happened. Moderna had been around for 10 years pushing this mode RNA. That's actually what they called themselves at first. The mRNA, they called their company mode RNA, and then they changed it to Moderna. The emphasis is on a different syllable, so you don't realize what they're messing with, right? Before the pandemic, Novavax had revenues of only $18 million. This meant that capturing any portion of the global vaccine sales would create massive value for shareholders. And yet, I'm surprised because of Pfizer, again, just a 12% increase, they were way down on the list. And Pfizer had big sales. I mean, little Novavax was only $18 million, but Pfizer was $9 billion. Almost 500 times higher. And yet, even though they had total sales before the pandemic bonanza, we should call it the Ponderosa pandemic, but they had sales of $9.5 billion, and they're going to make $30 billion just from the vaccine. So I would think that would be priced into the stock. But, of course, the stock market has no rhyme or reason to anything that's happening. Analysts expect the total sales from COVID-19 vaccines to be about $100 billion. $100 billion, and they have absolutely no liability. So why not get those stocks, right? I'm not admitting that. I'm not saying that. I mean, there's ethical issues involved. Trump administration awarded a firm $1.3 billion to make COVID vaccine syringes. And not a single one has been made. As a matter of fact, they haven't even made the factory yet. This is Apiget. I remember reporting on this last year. Apiget. You know, I think this Operation Warp Speed was a stick-up. These are nothing but bank robbers. $1.3 billion federal loan for these people. They haven't made the first syringe. They were going to, Apiget was going to build a factory, hire 650 people. It's going to be an industrial park in North Carolina. They cleared and graded the land for construction, but nothing has been done at all. They haven't moved their operation at any way to that. When they contacted Pfizer, they said, whether or not they come online or whether or not the FDA approves anything, because they still haven't even gotten FDA approval, they said it wouldn't have any impact on our output or processes. Moderna and Johnson & Johnson didn't even comment. This all happened when Trump triggered the Defense Production Act to fight the pandemic back in May. Remember that last year? They kicked out a $765 million loan to Eastman Kodak also that stalled in August. But in addition to this money coming from the Trump administration, you also had the Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, run by the former Eli Lilly CEO, Alex Azar, kicked in $453 million to this stick-up operation, Apiget. And then you had the Defense Department kick in another $251 million. This is one of the things that's really been a big warning signal to me, the fact the Pentagon is involved in this, the distribution of it, the funding of it, all of this stinks to the high heavens as far as I'm concerned. I had a doctor, as I mentioned earlier, I won't mention his first name or last name because I don't want to get him in trouble, but he sent me links to the CDC's own data and the FDA. Placebos, he said, are effective in preventing COVID deaths. Isn't that interesting? The CDC admitted that the unprecedented public health measures of 2020 and 2021 were useless against SARS, according to the links that are here. 377,000 Americans died, they said, in 2020 from the virus. It was the number three cause of death after heart disease and cancer, according to the CDC. COVID was the cause of 11% of all deaths. 99.9% of Americans were not killed by COVID in 2020, but Americans are still scared to death of dying from it. But they're not scared enough, said the medical doctor, to stop smoking. They're not scared enough to stop overeating. They're not scared enough to stop abusing drugs. And then the placebo. There's three FDA authorized vaccines, they said, were very effective in preventing COVID deaths, we're told, right? Remember, we had the competition. You had Pfizer came out first the Monday after the election, said, we're 90% effective. Then you had the Russians come out, we're 93% effective. A week later, Moderna came out and said, we're 94% effective. And the very next day, Pfizer said, we're 94.5% effective. Well, what happened to the people that they gave the placebo to? How did they figure this effectiveness rate? Well, according to them, the people who were in the placebo group of the three FDA-authorized vaccines, for Pfizer, the placebo was 100% effective. For Moderna, it was 99.99% effective. And for Janssen, that's the Johnson & Johnson manufacturer, it was 99.97%. So the doctor says, many of my friends and family have taken one of these experimental, unlicensed, unapproved injections against my advice. And now they are part of a huge international clinical trial. I'm very happy to remain in the placebo group. Exactly. And this is the kind of propaganda they are running to people.
Hey everyone, I am Seema Yasmin. I'm a doctor and a medical journalist at the Stanford Center for Health Education. And welcome
having trouble reading
to Viral Facts with Digital Medics. I know
Stanford.
A lot of you have
she's
questions
so
about COVID-19
that,
vaccines because I get asked a ton of them on my social media. So in the next
the
roughly 4 minutes, I'm going to answer your questions about vaccine side effects, allergies, and one final question that might sound a bit drastic, but it's really important to clear up.
Oh, well, I'm here to reassure you with some happy news that you don't
have anything
at all to worry
about. What's the deal with vaccine side effects, and how should you expect to feel after you get vaccinated? Well, most people feel completely fine after getting their first and second shots of the Pfizer, BioNTech, Moderna, and AstraZeneca vaccines. Only about 1 in 2,000 people reported any kind of symptoms to the CDC after receiving the vaccines, and fewer than 1 in 20,000 people reported any serious symptoms.
So you get the idea.
Now, these rates
you
are actually
idea.
Quite similar
and,
to those.
You know, statistics don't lie, but liars use statistics. You can cover this a lot of different ways. You can say, well, only 1 in 2,000 people got it. But, of course, the real truth is that the number of adverse effects are up by 6,000% versus a year earlier. That the number of people who have died is equivalent to the number of reported deaths into the vaccine adverse effects reporting system the previous 11 years combined already. But let's not scare anybody about that. Just look at the pretty girl and listen to her reassuring words as they now talk about how exceedingly rare these things are. No, they're not. Scathing FDA report finds that the Johnson & Johnson COVID vaccine plant, where 15 million doses were ruined, is unsanitary, and the staff training is inadequate. This is in Maryland. And again, so we didn't get the Apoget facility even built. But, you know, they gave $250 million when they approved, when Trump approved the Johnson & Johnson thing. He gave $250 million to ramp up production because Johnson & Johnson hasn't produced vaccines in the past. So they were ramping up production and converting facilities from Merck because Merck closed down their vaccine research thing, said, we'll just manufacture it for Johnson & Johnson. So then we had an error that caused 15 million doses to not be made, and the FDA started looking around at that plant. After reviewing closed-circuit TV footage, visiting the site in person, inspectors made a number of observations, including that the building housing the production line was not kept in clean condition. Staff were not properly trained to prevent cross-contamination. Personal hygiene was a problem. One member of staff who moved between different manufacturing zones only recorded once in the plant's shower logbook. So I've talked about that once before when I was working at Texas Instruments, how they put everybody in a clean room. Everybody had to wear booties and, you know, the whole bit, and put their hair in a shower cap and that type of thing. And then they would just walk out in the break room and shuffle around and then go back in. They couldn't figure out why they couldn't produce anything in that facility. But, you know, what did I know? I was just an entry-level engineer straight out of college. It's not Republicans. It's the millennials that are rejecting the jab, says Fauci. The fact that one may not get vaccinated, in this case, it's a disturbingly large proportion of Republicans. On the one hand, they want to be relieved of the restrictions, but on the other hand, they don't want to get vaccinated. It just almost doesn't make any sense. This is what we heard from that former CEO of Planned Parenthood with Cuomo's brother, Fredo. She was saying, we can't let people out before we got them vaccinated. They won't get the vaccine. We got to keep that there as a carrot. And that's exactly what Fauci is saying. That's what this has always been about. And, of course, it's a lot of young people. You know, it's not Republicans. It's millennials who are rejecting the jab. So they've got propaganda for the young people as well that you'll find on YouTube. If I'm young and healthy, why do I need a couple the COVID reasons. Vaccine?
Good so question. One, doesn't mean you won't get sick. So younger people can get sick. Younger people can have what we call morbidity or lasting illness. They may not die from it, but they may have ongoing lung problems or neurologic problems or other things like that. But I think the other thing that we think about in pediatric is what is your risk in your community?
Oh, so, you got to do it for other people.
You know, I just told you we have a bunch of children who cannot get the vaccine. But if you are, let's say, 18-year-old who gets COVID infection and you give it to a 5-year-old and then they go visit.
You know, that's the whole thing. We've got people, elderly, multiple comorbidities, already sick, at or beyond life expectancy, and overweight. But we're not going to do anything to help those people. We're going to keep therapeutics away from them. And we're going to vaccinate our very, very young children and expose them to the risks of this vaccine. They have zero risks from COVID. They have non-zero risks, no matter how you want to spend this thing for this vaccine. But we're going to sacrifice our children for them. Millennials and Gen Z are more likely to be hesitant about getting vaccinated than older people. Simply put, younger people are not afraid of the virus. Matter of fact, that they do a public opinion poll, they find that over 70, you got 60% of the people who are worried about potential side effects of the vaccine. Even over 70, I'm sorry, say that COVID is very dangerous. But the people who are worried about the vaccine, it's down around 20%. It's the other way around when you look at the people who are young. And that's the truth. The vaccine is the risk. Adults in their 20s and 30s are more concerned about the vaccine side effects. But no, just do what Fauci says. Do what he says, because we need to get the vaccine passport. Because he says so. And that's where this whole thing was set the entire time. The immunization agenda of 2030 that Gates has, that's about money. It's about control. But it's really about identification and tracking. That's where they want you to go. All right, that's it for the broadcast today. Thank you for listening. And again, please share the broadcast with people. Here's where you can find all the links at thedavidknightshow.com, how you can support us and how you can find the live stream as well as the podcast of the full show, the videos of the full show, and multiple clips from the show. Yesterday we had one clip that was like a minute. We had the longest one was like 20 minutes, and of course the full show, 3 hours, so pick what you want. Please share that around. We've got 4 different places where you can find the clips.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.